air right now for Bamford Racing Radio. And tonight we have our Auto Club NASCAR race review from the weekend of racing at Auto Club Speedway this past weekend. And joining me shortly will be our co-host, Sal Fragala. In the meantime, I'll give you a rundown of how the show will go here tonight. We're going to start with some short track news, and then we're going to offer some updates from the ARCA Menards series, the ARCA East, and the ARCA West. Those series did not race this weekend, but we'll make sure you know when the upcoming races are happening and when to tune in. Now, the ARCA Menards series has one race under their belt. They will be racing this coming weekend out at Phoenix Raceway. Or no, I guess that's in a couple of weeks. They'll be racing at Phoenix Raceway. So we'll keep you up to date with all those dates and times. At 9 o'clock, at the top of the hour, we are going to talk with our guest, Greg Van Alst. He is the driver of the number 35 Chevrolet in the ARCA Menards series, and he's also the Daytona winner. So we're looking forward to chatting with Greg and catching up with him about that win. And then at afterward, we will give you some updates from the NASCAR Truck Series. Again, they did not race this weekend, but we will make sure you know when their next race is as well. Afterward, we will get into the NASCAR Cup and Xfinity Series. Both of those series did race this weekend at Auto Club Speedway, their last races, and the current configuration at Auto Club Speedway. And we'll keep you up to date with everything that happened over the weekend in both of those series. 10 o'clock is our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound-Off conversation with our Bamford Racing crew. And I believe joining me for that conversation will be Jay Huseman and Mike Orzel. So Sal's not here yet, so I'm hoping he'll be here shortly. There he is. Okay, we'll bring him into the queue. And first of all, welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. I'm sorry I'm late. It's we're having the one heck of a winter over here right now and working at the port.
Yeah. And we're in the 50s
It's hard
here
to get.
Today.
Yeah, we had snow at Auto Club over the weekend, and man, I'm still. It's I don't know. It's just crazy.
Well, I saw on social
crazy
media
weather.
That you were at the track this weekend, and I was glad to see that. And I know Saturday was a little bit of a bust, but we got a doubleheader on Sunday. So we'll certainly talk about that in our last half hour of our review show here tonight. But for now, I want to get into the I sent you some notes on our Teams app of some short track racing information. So we'll get into that now. We'll start with the dirt notes that we have here.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, you know what, Sharon? During the off season,
yeah.
I had to get a new phone. And everything got deleted, so I mean, I've been like stressed and trying to get all my apps back because of because like I said, I had to get a new phone, and my other phone just went kaput. So
okay.
So I was able to download the app, so I'm going through it right now, and then I can see. Okay, here it is. It came up. Because at first there was nothing there. It was blank. Everything came up.
My.
Okay, let's go.
Okay,
let's
go ahead and start with the dirt. We'll go every other one. Freddie Rahmer kicked off the 2023 season at Lincoln Speedway this weekend with a trip to Victory Lane. So that was a good race for Freddie Rahmer. And that to do with the local short track racing that takes place all around the country.
Okay, then we have the new Power Desert Micro Series is debuting this year at Power.com. I'm not too sure what kind of micro series is.
Yeah,
I should have done a little bit of research on it. Huh?
And it's open wheel racing is what it is.
Oh, is that
it's
what it
open
is?
Wheel racing. Yeah, PowerEye Desert Micro Series. So you can find out more at PowerEye, PowerEye.com. And they will tell you all about their debut in the 2023 season. It actually starts on April 14th at Aztec Speedway. And it looks like they're basically going to be at Aztec Speedway, Legacy Speedway, Fairground Speedway. And those are the three tracks they'll be racing at this season. And it's right out of Illinois here. Well, the racing is actually going to be in New Mexico, in the New Mexico and Colorado areas. But the release that came out on this came from Belleville, Illinois. So PowerEye is going to debut out there in the West now.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
going
to be real
really
interesting.
Kind of cool. Also, the Kern County Raceway opener for the USAC West Coast Sprint Car Series was rained out this weekend for the same reason that Auto Club Speedway was rained out. So you want to follow up on that to find out when that race will be taking place. Did they race Sunday, do you know, Sal? Or was the whole weekend
raining? No, it was raining out for the whole weekend. But actually, Kern County is where we have the half mile where the SRL Southwest
right.
Tour makes a stop
right.
there, and also the ARCA West makes a stop there too. That's like two hours. That's another one of our home tracks. They got
exactly.
It's going really, really strong. And you follow Lance Jennings, he's like one of our top riders out here when it comes to anything USAC. Lance Jennings is the man that you wanna follow.
Exactly right. And then there's some things going on in the world of outlaws.
Yes, the Outlaws and the PA Posse are set for an early season war next month. Also, which you can go to theworldofoutlaws.com and you can get all the information there. And really, really, really good website, really informative. There's a lot of stuff on there, a lot of, just like Racing America and stuff like that. So a lot of information.
Exactly.
A lot of stories and good stuff on there. So that's definitely a site. If you want anything about dirt in the world of outlaws, you definitely want to check out that website.
Absolutely. Also at theworldofoutlaws.com is an article from Nick Graciano. Case Carson Macedo hopes to improve his consistency in pursuit of the World of Outlaws Sprint Cars title this year. So if you want to kind of get a heads up on this particular driver, Carson Macedo, you definitely want to go to that worldofoutlaws.com website, and there's even more.
Yes, and then Chris Madden has the early title advantage in the World of Outlaws late model series. He has his eyes set on the championship heading into March, which you can also go to worldofoutlaws.com. And if you're wondering what a World of Outlaws late model is, it's a full body late model car that they race on the dirt. So unlike the sprints of the midgets, this is
right.
a full body car. Really, really exciting to watch, banging and bumping, and something that you might want to check out.
Exactly, and we do like introducing our listeners to different types of racing around the country in hopes that you'll get out to a racetrack near you to catch some of the action. Okay, also, when it comes to the Superstar Racing Experience Championship, Tony Stewart plans to come back for his second championship. So Tony Stewart fans will definitely want to check that out. And keep in mind, the Superstar Racing Experience will now be televised on Thursday nights. When they start racing, it will be televised Thursday nights on ESPN. So that should bring a lot of eyes to that Superstar Racing Experience.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely going to bring a lot of eyes to that. You can go on there and actually go to their website, and I think Haley Deegan is going to be running a full series again this year with the series also. So for all you female race fans out there. Got something to look forward to besides Tony Stewart's already married anyways.
Yeah, and you can read up about it over at Racing America.
Exactly. And then we got the rising prospect Luke Baldwin will compete in a Pro-Late model at Hickory Speedway next month, which you can watch that on Flow Racing. That ought to be really exciting to see. Hickory Speedway has always put out some really good racing. And, yep. You know, you're going to get, you know, Luke Baldwin along with, you know, it's going to be real exciting.
Okay, and at Short Track Scene, another website, you can read about Ward Burton taking a brisk trip behind the wheel of a late model stock car. So could it lead to a final start? I don't know, but I really encourage fans to head over to Short Track Scene and read up about Ward Burton.
And then our 2022 Snowball Derby champion, Derek Thorne, is going to be making his first start of the season at the ASA Stars Opener. Also entered is Jacob Gomes, who was last year's SRL Southwest Tour champion. We're going to be represented by five West Coast drivers, Blaine Rocha, Preston Peltier, and also Jeremy Doss, who's a former SRL Southwest Tour champion, will also be making the will also be making his run at the to grab that big time money. Just a real quick note, Matt Weaver, who used to be with Racing America, is no longer with Racing America. He's back with Short Track Scene, so this is where the story came from. So you want to give Matt Weaver a follow. He's back doing the Short Track stuff and left Racing America during the off season. So you'll see a lot of good stories, a lot of good articles put out by Matt Weaver on
yes,
Short Track.
Yes, indeed. Nobody, he's very close to what's happening with Short Tracks around the country. So definitely worth a follow at Short Track Scene. Okay, also some Truck Series regulars, and we talked about this last week as well. Ty Majeski, Grant Infinger, and Carson Hocevar are among some of the early entries for that ASA Stars opener. So, again, you can read about that at Short Track Scene. I believe we originally read it over at Racing America, but really excited to see these Truck Series drivers taking part in that event.
Oh, yes. And then Casey Johnson hopes to pick up a big victory in his first trip to the Rattler, which is going to be coming up. Derek Thorne has also entered the Rattler with another team. He ran the Rattler last year, and that's part of the SRL's national tour that they started up last year. So they added, I think, two or three more races this year to the SRL national schedule, along with the SRL Southwest Tour. The races, you know, over here in my part of in my neck of the woods. So the Rattler's going to probably have Ty Majeski will be coming back, probably Carson Hocevar, along with Bubba Pollard, Steven Nassi, and there'll be a lot of big names over there. But it'll be neat to see Casey Johnson back over there, along with Derek Thorne, who raced it last year. He'll be back again this year to try and see if he can pick up a win.
It's always great to see those West Coast drivers traveling across the country to take part in these big events. Okay, also, the Cars Tour opener has picked up a presenting sponsor and a purse boost. You can read about that over at Flow Racing. They are going to get Pure Year Tank Lines will sponsor the season opener for the Cars Tour at Southern National Motorsports Park on March the 11th. So the Cars Tour is really taking off this year, and I can't wait for that season to get started. So we're going to go ahead and move over now, Sal, over to the ARCA Menards Series. Again, they did not race this, but they will be racing in a few weeks here. So we're going to give you the updates on all the upcoming races here. We are going to have to wait a little bit because Actually, the Arca Menard Series and the Arca West will have a combined event coming up at Phoenix Raceway, not this weekend, but next weekend on March 10th, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, the General Tire 150 at Phoenix Raceway, and that will be televised on Fox Sports 1. So a big combined event there on the national stage because the NASCAR teams will be racing there as well.
Oh yes, it's going to be a really good opening. And just one real quick note: if anyone's in the Vegas area this weekend, Braxton Bush will be making his Bandolero start at the Bullring this weekend. Since the Cup Series will be there, Kyle Busch went ahead and entered him in the Bandolero Series in the little short track. So he'll be racing Saturday night.
Cool.
At the Bullring in Las Vegas. So if you want to go out and see, you know Kyle and Samantha Bush will both be there. And then, you'll get to see Braxton Bush, make his first start in a Bandolero out there at the Bullring this Saturday at Las Vegas Motor Speedway.
And it seems that Braxton is following right in the footsteps of his dad. He's been quite the racer already on the racing scene. So this is a do not miss if you want to get out there to the Bullring. It's a great facility, and I'm happy to say I've been there now, Sal.
I know. That's why I mentioned it, because that's where I met you at. All these years we've done the radio show, never, ever met you, and finally got to meet you at the Bullring. So I thought I'm going to throw this one in and see if I was waiting for you to throw a little bit extra mustard on that hot dog and say, yeah, I've been there, so I know what that track is like.
Exactly. Always a good feeling when you've had the privilege of being able to visit one of the local short tracks. Not local for me, but for you, more so for you.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go ahead and talk about the Arca Menard Series. They only have one race under their belt. Greg Van Alst will be joining us at the top of the hour. And let me see if I can get this year's driver standings up here. Next year. Okay. Greg Van Alst is right now the series points leader with his win in the Arca Menard Series out at Daytona. Kind of a big surprise winner there at Daytona. He got out of the car saying, guys like me aren't supposed to win this thing.
Yeah, well, you know what? I really wouldn't go as far as saying guys like me shouldn't be winning these things because, he went out there and he won it, and it was it got the job done, and it was a really popular win for him. A lot of fans really, really, really paid homage, not homage to him, but really enjoyed the win. A lot of congratulations on social media over the win.
Yes, indeed. And I was so happy when I saw that he won the race because he's been wanting to do that. We've had him on the show off and on over the past 2 years, and this will be the third year. And it's really cool to see him see that dream become a reality. So I can't wait to kind of talk to him about that victory. Now that he's had a chance to kind of absorb it all in. In second place was Connor Mosack, Sean Corr, LeVar Scott, and Mandy Chick, a couple of females that were in this race, round out the top five there. So there's an article about Mandy Chick over at ArcaRacing.com if you want to check that out and learn more about her.
There you go. See, you just got to stay on the internet and just keep following, what's going on around the racing world, and you can, especially on these different websites, you can just a host of knowledge.
Host of information.
Information.
Yes. So we know that Phoenix Raceway will be the season opener for the Arca West. For the Arca East, And I've mentioned this a couple of times already. I'm so used to the ARCA East opener being at New Smyrna. I really miss them being there this year. They aren't going to open up their season until March 25th. And it's going to be out at Five Flags Speedway, Sal, 8 p.m. Eastern Time for the Pensacola 200. And it will be carried by Flow Racing on live streaming. And, of course, the delayed broadcast of these races will be at CNBC or the sports app. So if you can, try to catch this race live on Flow Racing, or you can listen to it over at arcaracing.com during the race on Saturday, March the 25th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time.
Yeah, you know, and it's funny because they have a really short schedule this year compared to last year.
Yeah, it is short. Well, last year's was kind of short, too.
They only have eight races.
Yeah,
yeah, but they only have an eight race.
You're talking about East or West?
They only have eight races. And then talk about the ARCA East. There's only eight races this year.
Yeah. ARCA West has more.
Yeah, and then they also got rid of the Sioux Chiefs Showdown. They're not having it this
year.
Yeah,
I haven't seen anything about the Sioux Chiefs Showdown. I'm hoping we hear more about that as the They got rid of it?
It's done. It's toast. They announced it sometime in December that the Sioux Chiefs Showdown, they're not gonna run it anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, because that really brought a lot of people into it to race for that second championship within the championship. So sorry to hear that. Okay.
Yeah.
So more news that you can catch up on over at arcaracing.com. So Tony Cosentino, another West Coast guy, he's ready to face the challenge of his first full ARCA Menards Series season. So he's a West Coast driver too, right?
Yes. And then also, let's not forget that Frankie Muniz also made his first start in the ARCA Menards series at Daytona. So, you know, it was neat to see him because he was cutting his teeth over here at Irwindale last year. He raced a whole bunch of pro late model races, you know, getting ready for the ARCA Menards series this season.
Yes, and I can't wait to see what he does as this season progresses. He did race at Daytona, and he didn't get a top 10 finish, but he wasn't that far out of the top 10. Let me see if I can count down here. There's 5. There's 10. So he finished 11th, just outside the top 10. So not bad for Frankie Muniz's first race out at Daytona.
Oh no, it wasn't. It was a really good. It was a really good finish for him.
Okay, Sebastian Aries teams up with Rev Racing for 2 ARCA Menards Series races. You can read more about that. He'll be racing out in the West, so you'll be able to see. He'll race at Sonoma Raceway, but his first race out west. I'm trying to see when the first race is.
The first race is Phoenix.
Is it Phoenix? Okay. So Phoenix
and Sonoma. Yeah, that's
our
first West race.
Yeah, the two races that he'll be racing with the ARCA Menards series. So that's going to be fun to watch as well.
Yeah, and he's also running under Rev Racing this year. Last year he ran He ran with the same owner that had Sean Hingorani, which was Eric Nascimento.
Oh,
was
yes,
the team
yeah.
that he ran with last year with Nascimento Racing.
Yes, I remember. Well, there's another driver teaming up with Naki Klauer Motorsports is Bradley Erickson. He's going to unite for the full ARCA Menards Series West season. So co-owners Mike Naki and Tim Klauer have announced a strong program for this year, not only in the ARCA West, but in the Spears SRL SRL Spears Prolate Model Series in the Trans Am Western TA2 Championship Series, as well as multiple local races. So look for Bradley Erickson, just 16 years old, from Phoenix, Arizona. So he's going to run for that Rookie of the Year award and the championship in the ARCA Menards Series this year. Or ARCA West, I'm sorry.
Yes. Yes, and then actually that's a really good, solid, strong team is the Nakey Clower. I did a lot of work for him in the past, and Bradley Erickson is really a really, really nice kid.
That's really good to hear. Okay, I apologize for my voice. I'm going to have to take a break here for a minute, Jay or Sal, if there's something you want to say, and I'll be right back.
Okay, of course, this year we're going to see Colmore coming back to Bill McAnally Racing I think he's coming back, he said, for a partial season this year. But they end up getting Tanner Reif, who's from Henderson, Las Vegas, who a lot of you might have known. It was Tanner and Taylor Reif who ran the Prolates in the SRL Southwest Tour last year. So Tanner ended up picking up a ride with Bill McAnally. He'll be in the famed number 16 car. Have some big shoes to fill. And David Cooley, who we need to get back on the show to finish with the interview with him, will be his spotter. So David will be on the radio with Tanner for the full season. That should be a really exciting season. Oh yeah, for Tanner. Him and his brother will be racing against each other for the whole season. Tyler will be doing he'll be doing both East and West. Tanner will just be with the West season.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I apologize for my voice again. It is getting better, as you can probably tell, but I still have moments where it gets a little congested, and I might have to take a break or two here or there, Sal. But anyway, coming up is going to be, as I mentioned earlier, Greg Van Alst. He won the ARCA Menards Series race at Daytona for their season opener, and he also got the sweet move of the race in that ARCA Menards Series race. You can see that sweet move of the race, as well as his victory lane interview over at ArcaRacing.com and any highlights from that Daytona 200 victory. So a lot of behind-the-scenes information there. And I'm really excited for Greg Van Alst. As I mentioned, we've been talking to him, Sal, for the last couple of years. This will be his third year in the ARCA Menards Series. And he had a feeling that he was going to win the Daytona 500 after he did his test at Daytona. And he told his wife, he says, "You got to be there because I'm going to win." And so he kind of knew that this was coming.
You know, and they had a really good field. They had 39 cars start the race. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was a full field. You know, I missed the race. I missed the whole Daytona thing because I was up in Canada. We went to New York and Canada to celebrate our third year anniversary, so we didn't fly back until Saturday night. So I was only able to catch the Daytona 500, but I missed the trucks.
Are you a member
at
Pro Racing, Sal? Because you can still see the replay over there.
You know what? I am, and I'm going to have to go back and look at it. And you know,
because I
caught pieces of it, and then like I said, you know, we're celebrating our anniversary, so I couldn't really, you know, stand in front of the TV. I could have made an excuse saying, "Well, let's get an appetizer and some drinks," but then she would have seen the race and she'd have said, "Yeah, that's the only reason you want to stop here is to watch a race. We're celebrating our anniversary. Well, I couldn't do it to my wife."
Well, happy anniversary, Sal and Sandy. Now, I just want to give you a heads up. I know Jay wanted to call in with a question or two for Greg Van Alst when he comes on. I want to give you a heads up that he may call in with a question or two for him during the interview. So just an FYI on that as well. He should be calling in here shortly, and we're definitely looking forward to chatting with him.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, so this past weekend, speaking of, you know, of our Arca Menard drivers and our Arca East, I finally got to meet Raja Karuth.
Oh, good deal.
Yeah, I finally got to meet him at the track on Sunday night after he was done racing the Xfinity race. I took a picture of him by his car, then I also met Parker Retzlaff too.
Yeah,
he was,
really.
He also raced the Xfinity.
Yeah.
And Roger's just really down to earth. We're ready. He's here.
He's here. So definitely looking forward to talking with the Daytona winner of the Arca Menard Series, Greg Van Alst. Welcome back to the show, Greg.
Yeah, thank you. A little bit different circumstances coming on here this time, right?
It is. I was so excited when you run that race. This is something you've been working at least for the last couple of years. And I know that you've always had high hopes for Daytona, but this year was a little bit different. You knew after you did some testing out at Daytona that you were going to win that race, and you told your wife, you got to be here.
Yeah, so in the test in January, the move that I pulled to win the race, I basically did it in the test, and you know, was kind of around the same cars that we were racing with. And we pulled out, passed them going into three the same way, beat them to the start-finish line, and we decided right then and there we better put this thing in the trailer and go home. So had high hopes, you know, just a good start to the season.
So you kind of knew coming into it that there was a chance, but tell us what your thoughts were as you were coming to the finish line and saw that checkered flag and your thoughts about winning that Daytona 500.
Thought I was dreaming.
Oh,
I mean, there's no other way to put it.
Daytona race, 200.
Yeah, I thought I was dreaming. I mean, it's, you know, is, you know, the last lap, last corner pass. I mean, that's what dreams are made of. I mean, that's the stuff that you think about as a kid, you know, or, you know, in other sports analogies, it's like stepping up to the plate and bottom of the ninth inning, you know, and you got to hit a home run to win the game. It's just, I still can't believe it's real.
Well, all of us folks here at Fan for Racing were very happy for you. It was a racy, sweet move of the race at ArcaRacing.com. And one of our Fan for Racing crew here, Jay Huseman, was so excited about it, he asked if he could call in and ask one or two questions here. So I'm going to bring him into the queue and give him that opportunity. Jay?
Okay. Well, first off, Sharon, I know I'm not hosting tonight for this, but I thank you for letting me call in. Greg, congratulations.
Thank you.
What impact, my question, I got one. What impact do you think you winning a race like this has for others to go back to that grassroots team of you and your buddies building the car and making it and running at the top – higher levels, and corporate? I know you mentioned some in one of your interviews, sponsors staying with you instead of going to a multi-car team. And I'm going to hang up and listen, but I appreciate the time to you and Sharon. And congratulations again.
Thank you. I've had so many short track racers message me. People I've never met, you know, not trying to say it in a bad way, but people I've never heard of that have reached out and, you know, said that me getting out and saying that motivated them because now they believe that, you know, there is a chance for people like, you know, us. So, I mean, that's been probably the coolest thing is that multiple people have reached out. You know, as far as sponsorship wise, we've pulled in a little bit, but I'm hoping that, you know, as time passes, winning Daytona is something that'll allow us to, you know, even if it's year after year, maybe find, you know, strong sponsorship just going to Daytona every year. So I think the sponsorship side of things, time will tell. Hopefully those start rolling in.
Okay. Now, we also have our co-host here tonight, Sal Segala, so I'm going to give him a chance to ask a question or two as well. Sal?
Hey, Greg. First of all, congratulations on the win. You know what? And I know exactly what you're talking about. You know, when you talk, you know, when you say, you know, you get out there, you know, and you get the win, you know, and a lot of drivers, you know, are going to, of course, going to congratulate you on it. You know, following social media, you know, I read a lot of, you know, congratulations from different drivers, and it was neat to see it because of the fact, you know, that, you know, it shows, you know, that at any given time, you know, you put yourself in the right position, you know, you get the right chemistry going, you come down to the track, you know, with that, not only that hunger, but, you know, that confidence level, you know, that'll boost you, you know, to make, like you said, to make that pass, you know, for the win.
Yeah, it's just been completely surreal and it's cool just reading the comments and whatnot all across social media.
You know, and actually, you know, coming from a short track background, you were CRA Super Series, you know, champion in 2019. Those CRA championships, they don't come easy. I mean, you're racing against some of the best short track racers on the East Coast. You know what? And you know, to back it up with the win, especially at Daytona. You know, I'm sure, you know, that speaks a lot about, you know, the team, but it speaks about more, you know, the talent, you know, and the desire, you know, that you have as a driver.
Yeah, going to the team aspect of it, it's the same team that won the 2019 CRA Championship. It's the same group of guys. I think our crew chief from the late model days, he stays up in Michigan racing. He still comes to the track and helps us some, but outside of him, it's pretty much the same group of guys that won that late model championship. And I think that's what makes it so sweet is, you know, we've stuck together as a team through this whole process.
So what's going through your mind, you know, as you're coming down to the last lap, you know, and you see the checkered flag, you know, and you're looking around, you're thinking, you know, this is Daytona, you know what, you know, you see year after year, series after series, you know what, the last 100 feet, the last 200 feet, last 300 feet, anything can happen. You know, a quick caution comes out, you know, and there, you know, there goes the checkered flag or, you know, it's just anything. And what's going through your mind, you know, as you're getting closer to the checkered flag, you know, and you're thinking, gosh, you know, this is it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'll just kind of take you back to going into turn three. I had a run and had to react. I kind of felt like it was just a little bit too soon, but pulled out, side drafted off of the 44, and you know, kind of simultaneously as I went to move away from the 44 to kind of break that side draft, I was watching my mirror, and you can see the 18 is, I think he's kind of thinking he's going to look to the outside, but then when I make the move, It just kind of engages our cars together. The air off of his car kind of pushed ours. And then, you know, by that time we're pretty much coming off of four, and I'm just kind of listening to my spotter and glancing in my mirror, and he comes across and says, "Reckon behind you," and "Get down, get down, get down." And at that point, I had no idea what was happening, right? I didn't know if they were, you know, someone had a run and was getting ready to run into us, and you know, you cross the line and you know, you realize you've crossed the line, and it just, again, it was just so surreal. You know, just like I said, when I got out, guys like me aren't supposed to win here. So, you know, just, it was for hours after the race, even, it was just the complete disbelief, thinking that I'm going to wake up and it's going to be Saturday morning and I got to go run the race still. So, yeah, it's can't even put it into words.
Well, Greg, I just want to say, you know, congratulations again on the win, you know, and you know, best of luck the rest of the season, you know, and, you know, see what happens, you know, with your upcoming races. I know you got Phoenix coming up, which is going to be a good one, too. You know, getting together, you know, with the ARCA West guys, you know, and I'm sure we'll see another big field, you know, like you guys seen over at Daytona. And with that, you know, I'm going to turn it back over to Sharon.
Thank you.
Greg, I know after the race, during your interviews, you mentioned that you had a lot of catching up to do with regard to your Phoenix car because you put so much effort into that Daytona car. You've had about a week or so now. How's that coming along?
I feel like we're in good shape. somebody else looks at it, they're not going to think that. The nose still isn't on it. The hood's not on it. Motor in it. Tranny's in it. All the wiring's hooked up. Oil lines are all hooked up. Seat, jar bottles, fuel cell, all that's done. I feel like we're in good shape. Our wrap guy wants to come Thursday to wrap it. I originally had it planned to wrap on Monday, so I was going to have the whole weekend to get it done. But he's taking a fishing trip and wants to come wrap it Thursday. So Tuesday, Wednesday is going to be some long day, but I think we'll be in good shape. And then, you know, the nice thing is we might actually get a day of rest in between now and Phoenix if we get it done and it's wrapped and sitting there ready to go.
Okay, well, you've still got another week to go before that race takes place. The ARCA Menards Series is going to race out at Phoenix in the General Tire 150 on March 10th, which will be broadcast live on Fox Sports 2, and that's a combined event with the ARCA West. Have you previewed the ARCA West guys yet that you'll be racing up against?
No, I'll probably do that on the trip out there. It takes 32 hours to get there. So a couple of my buddies that helped me will help me drive the hauler out there, and probably in between when I'm not driving the hauler, I'll be kind of looking at that.
Well, Greg, I wanted to give you a chance, too, here tonight, because this win was a huge win for the underdogs. As you mentioned, so many people reached out to you. I wanted to give you a chance to really shout out your team, because it's not a big organization team. It's a couple of your friends and buddies and just a small group of people. Let's give them a big shout out here.
Yeah, so every night I got a couple guys that come over and are usually in my race shop, Brandon Grant, Jason Garrett. And, you know, we have some guys that have been with us for years. Chris Garrett's Jason's brother. Matt Van Oss is my brother. And Brian Demlin, he's a late model racer that races in the CRA stuff. Devin Fairchild, he's from the same area we are. You know, of course, Jim Long's crew chief since we started the ARCA stuff. Brandon Lyons, spotter for William Byron, he spots for us, and he's from same area as we are. And then you know, we obviously got to thank CB from CB Fabricating. He's the reason why all this happens. And yeah, just a good group of people. And you know, I got Jason's girlfriend Elisa has been trying to help me with the social media stuff and videos, and then at the end of the day, absolutely owe everything to my wife. She's my rock, and you know, it's awesome to have support from her, but it's also nice to have support from so many people that have the passion for racing like I do.
Absolutely. I know you said Chad Bryant was a big part of that win as well, and you gave him and Jim Long some huge credit to this.
Yeah, we obviously the car that we bought, we bought it from Chad in 2021, and you know, he's been you know, a guy that we can call and bounce advice off of, and you know, he was one of the first ones to call me when the race was over and congratulate us.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations to you and all of your team. And, Greg, I'm really looking forward to the rest of the season here. And as you know, it won't be the last time we call on you to maybe come back and visit with us. Win or lose, we'd still like to talk to you throughout the season.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I would like to shout out a couple of our major sponsors that we had at Daytona: Vern's Concrete, Sam Pierce Chevrolet, Econ Cruz, Rick Horn. You know, those guys, those companies, they all stepped up and helped make this Daytona dream happen.
Absolutely. Again, we're so happy for you, and we can't wait for the next race.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I bet. Okay, so again, that's on March the 10th out at Phoenix Raceway, a combined event with the ARCA West. And it will be broadcast on Fox Sports 2. We'll be previewing that race in a couple of weeks here. So, again, thanks for coming on, Greg. And we know you want to get back to working on your Phoenix car. And we thank you for taking time out to chat with us here tonight.
All righty. As always, thanks for having me on.
We always look forward to it.
Thank you.
Take care now. All right, that is Greg Van Alt, the winner in the ARCA Menards Series at Daytona, and a huge win for the underdogs with Greg. It's so good to hear that so many people were reaching out to him, Sal.
You know,
go ahead, Sal.
You know, like I said, yeah, I follow social media a lot, you know what, and I've seen that. I guess we're having bad weather, so my phone got disconnected while you're in the middle of the interview. That's why I had to call back.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh, no, it's not your fault. It's just...
Excuse me. I just realized that you weren't there. So,
yeah.
Again, he mentioned that so many people had called him after the race, people that he didn't even know, that were happy to see him get that victory and looking for advice on how they, as a young or a small team, can maybe grab onto that same dream.
Yeah, it's neat. You know what? Even talking like with Derek, you know what, about, you know, his snowball derby win, you know, he got a lot of calls and stuff, you know, from, you know, text messages from people. And he was wondering how they got his phone number.
Yeah, me too.
you know, but
But they found a way, word of mouth.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, and you know, it depends who it is. If it's a well-known driver, you know what? I'm sure a lot of them, you know, just, you know, figure, you know, Derek wouldn't mind, and you know, so but that's awesome. I mean, you know what? It's just so. I mean, you know, when you think of these, you know, these underdog teams, you know, that get the job done, you know what, and, you know, we've had Greg on the show, I know, a few times, you know what, and you know, it's neat when they finally get that first win, especially a big one, and when they come back on, you know, to be able to, you know, give them the kudos and, you know, and just kind of celebrate it with them.
Mm-hmm. It was also kind of fun to hear him talk about how he made that same move during the practice session out at Daytona with exactly the same drivers, and it worked for him there. And so when he saw his opportunity to make that same move in the Daytona 500, I keep calling it the Daytona 500, but in that Daytona 200 race, that was pretty cool, too, that he had a kind of, that's kind of his premonition to why he thought it might happen.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you think about all the other drivers that had the same premonition, you know.
Yeah,
but, you know,
exactly.
And only one can win. Only one can win, you know what, and he was the one that crossed the star finish line first, you know what, and, you know, to get that win, you know, was just, you know, it was really something special for him, you know, and, you know, glad
really
we were able
is.
To share it with him, you know, I'm, you know, I'm glad you were able to get him on, you know, and get a chance, you know, talk to him and, you know, and, you know, continue to support him, you know, for the rest of the season.
Yes, indeed. Okay, well, we're going to move on to the truck series here. I know that they did not race this past weekend, but there's some news that is coming out in the truck series arena, and I do want to let you know when their next race is going to take place, because they'll be racing Friday night, and Jay and I will be talking about this race on Thursday night. It's the Victoria's Voice Foundation 200. It'll take place Friday, March the 3rd at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and will be televised, of course, on Fox Sports 1 with radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. Now, they'll have a practice session Friday, Sal, out at Las Vegas, also on Fox Sports 1. That'll be from 4:30 to 5. 5 o'clock will be the qualifying session that will also be televised on Fox Sports 1. So, again, we're looking forward to this Truck Series race. And speaking about that, Kaz Grala joins Tricon for the Las Vegas Motor Speedway Truck Series race. So we'll see Kaz Grala at that race.
Yeah, he was out here at Fontana in an Xfinity car last
night.
Yeah,
he's racing full-time in the Xfinity series.
Yeah,
with them
full-time in Xfinity, yeah. That's neat to see him pick up a ride for. I'll tell you, if you're going out to the race on Friday night, bundle up.
Oh, I know.
It's
isn't that crazy?
It's going to be freezing cold. It's going to be about 35 and Sharon. You know what it's like when that wind blows at that track.
Yeah.
You were there.
Yeah. Well, usually when the wind blows, it's warm air. In this case, it's going to be cold air. So
yeah, it's going to be freezing cold.
Yeah, so be prepared if you're going to the racetrack out there at Las Vegas. I wish I could be there for those races, but unfortunately, I'm going to be here and watching on TV, but I was excited to see that Kaz Grala is going to be doing double duty this year, or this weekend, I should say, out at Las Vegas.
Yeah, and also it's funny because Tricon also picked up John Hunter Nemechek also to run a truck this Friday night too. So Tricon has going to have a two truck effort.
Yes, and John Hunter, you know, is racing full-time in the Xfinity Series this year as well with Joe Gibbs racing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a – we'll talk about him later on. But, it's going to be – I really wish that Fontana would have brought back the trucks just, you know, because since this was our last two-mile race.
I know.
I really wish that it brought the trucks back just for this one last time. I'd like to see, you know – I'm sure we could have gotten a lot of, you know, a few of the Cup drivers I'm sure would have bounced over, you know, and raced. But then it would have gotten rained out, so they would have probably ran it on Friday night, and Friday night it was raining, and, you know, we got the rain on Saturday. So,
Sal, you were at the track this weekend. Give us a feel for what the feeling was out there at Auto Club Speedway, knowing that this would be the last race at that track, at that particular track.
You know, it was it was sad because Saturday we didn't get nothing in. You know, it rained all day and they just did driver intros. So, you know, usually the hike starts on Friday night. And then it moves into Saturday, you know, and then Sunday, you know, it's just climaxes. But we didn't get, you know, I talked to a lot of the fans about it. You know, sure, they were depressed about it. But, you know, it's like, you know, with the rain, everything got washed out. We usually have the red carpet, you know, where the drivers come out. They walk the red carpet through the infield, you know, to the front stretch. You know, and they have the driver intros there, you know, and you know, they let the fans on the track to sign their name on the start-finish line. They totally
missed that.
Crashed it. We missed it because the grass was too wet for anything. And you know, a lot of the drivers, you know, they...
Did you talk to any of those drivers about their thoughts about the last race?
I talked to a lot of them, you know, and a lot of them, they watched the 2 miles to stay. They like the five wide racing, you know, they like the old track, they like the old surface, you know, and, you know, the biggest thing is Auto Club coming back because they have no plans set for a new track, nothing set, and they just sold 90 acres, so now they only have like 88 acres left, and Bristol's sitting on 100 plus acres. You know, so I mean, they're really short on. It's going to be short on parking. So, a lot of the
They said they're going to have to lease the parking space area.
A lot of the drivers, without saying it, are thinking that this was the very last race told for Fontana. Period. Because this is what happened
to not the case.
Ontario. I know.
What's the possibility? Because I've heard that before too. What's the possibility? Do you think you could do a cup race at Irwindale or Kern County?
No.
No.
Nope. Nope. For one thing, you have to have you have to have a minimum of like 25,000 seats. Irwindale only holds 6,500. There's nowhere to put another 20,000 seats in that. It's just too small.
Yeah.
Plus the parking. Yeah. We have no parking. I mean, they'd have to park people.
It's kind of landlocked, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's Irwindale was completely out, and so is Kern. I mean, everyone says that they could do it at Kern. You know, they could add temporary seating around the track, but I don't see it at Kern either. If Fontana doesn't rebuild, we're down to Sonoma and Phoenix. Phoenix will be the closest to Vegas. Actually, Vegas is the closest to where we're at.
Wow, that's going to be very, very sad if that is in fact the case. I hope it's not. They say announcements will be coming shortly, but
none of the fans want to see it. The fans want that. They want as much as the fans want the 2 mile. As much as they don't show up, they want the 2 mile. They show up. You know what? Show some.
The drivers
support
want
it.
The 2 mile.
Oh yeah, they love the 2 mile. I mean, you talk to all the drivers. You know, they love it. I mean, they like the 4 or 5 wide racing. You know, the beat up surface. You know, and you know, just the way the track races. I mean, it was a sellout yesterday, but you know, last 3 years have been a sellout.
Yeah, it's kind of sad to see that happening. But, you know, it is what it is, and we'll have to kind of wait for any news that comes out with regard to that race. But you mentioned that we're going to be talking about John Hunter Nemechek here, and I'm going to do the Xfinity Series race. Even though it was the last race at Auto Club Speedway, we're going to start with the Xfinity Series. And I'm going to get a real quick drink here, but your quick thoughts on John Hunter winning that race.
Oh, it was exciting. Cole Custer had the race won until he got the flat tire. Had Cole not gotten that flat, Cole was by far the class of the field. Nobody was going to catch him. He's dialed in. Cole knows that track. He loves that track. And unfortunately, it just didn't happen for him. John Hunter Nemechek came in and stole the show. You know what? It was a great It was a great win. He was great in victory lane, and you know, it was sad because a lot of the fans left after the cup race.
Yeah, I saw that.
So there's only two fans left. But you know what? Xfinity still put on a good show. You know what? A lot of cautions. You know, we thought we were going to end earlier, but you know, it was neat to see. You know that. You know, the thanks to the fans that stayed. You know, got to really thank the fans that stayed. It was cold.
Yes.
It was freezing cold last night. But
yeah.
John Hunter Nemechek put on a show, and you know what? He got the win, and you know, and man, it was a good race.
It was a good race. John Hunter Nemechek, at the age of 25, racing the Von Albertsons Toyota number 20 machine for Joe Gibbs Racing and crew chief Ben Bashor. It was his third victory in 69 Xfinity Series races, his first victory and second top five finish this season. His first victory and first top 10 finish in three races at Auto Club Speedway. Excuse me. Then it was Sam Mayer finishing second, posting his second top 10 finish in two races at Auto Club and his first top 10 finish this season. Justin Allgaier posted a third-place finish, his eighth top 10 finish in 14 races at Auto Club Speedway. It was a fun race to watch. Let me get my notes here. It was after the sunset on Auto Club Speedway that John Hunter Nemechek drove his number 20 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota to victory lane, and that was the final race at the two-mile track. The race was delayed for more than a day. It was, again, his third career win for John Hunter Nemechek, the second for Joe Gibbs Racing. Nemechek was also the race, led the race high 49 laps. It was Sam Mayer's career best finish in second. Justin Allgaier actually got off his strategy twice during the 300-mile race, but he was able to rebound to finish third. Chandler Smith finished in fourth place, with Josh Berry rounding out the top five, despite getting into a couple of incidents throughout the event. Austin Hill took the checkered flag in sixth. Then it was Riley Herbst. They're showing Austin Hill twice here. I don't think that was Austin Hill in the number 10. I think it was Austin Dillon in the number 10. Then it was Brett Moffitt.
Yeah, it was Austin Dillon.
Yeah, Brett Moffitt, yeah. And Parker Kligerman round out the top 10. They've got Austin Hill listed here, but I think it was Austin Dillon. Cole Custer, as you mentioned, actually had the race in hand. He won both of the stages, but he blew a right front tire during the final stage. He ended up finishing 27th. There were 23 lead changes among 9 drivers, 10 cautions for 43 yellow flag laps. The average speed of that race was 115.471 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the top 10 here?
Yeah, it was a good race between Cole Custer and himself until the third stage when he did get that flat. Austin Hill showed a lot of speed early too.
I thought Riley was going to win it.
Yeah, and actually Riley was sitting third and fourth, you know, bouncing back and forth. And then at the end of the last 5-10 laps, Riley and Austin Dillon really had that was probably the best battle on the track. Was between Riley and Austin Dillon, because by then John Hunter Nemechek had already checked out, and then I didn't know that something was wrong with Daniel Hemric, but he got out of the car and he was on crutches.
Oh my!
Yeah, he was on crutches when
that.
He got out of the car. So then to see Ryan and Kyle Sieg finish back, you know, together, you know, back to back was pretty neat, you know. Yeah, and you know that was neat, but I'll tell you, John Hunter Nemechek, man, when he bounced back and forth. Sheldon Creed had an up and down day. I thought Sheldon for a while was going to win. Sheldon had some issues, and then came back, and then after that, he just really couldn't pull, you know, couldn't get anything back, couldn't get anything together. But, you know,
well,
congratulations,
you know, Joe
to John Hamilichek.
Joe Graff Jr. has moved over to Ryan Sieg Racing this year, and he had an 11th place finish. So that was really good to see him have a good finish out at Auto Club Speedway as well.
You know, and actually Joe Graff Jr. is going to be working with, we had him on the show, Bolden. When I get his name on.
Okay. When
we
you
had
get
him
it,
on
let me know.
I'm pretty sure we had him on the show before. But,
okay. Well, the margin of victory was 0.761 seconds. The race was 2 hours, 35 minutes, and 53 seconds long. And it really, only one driver was out because of an accident, and that was Greg Golding on lap 26. So he was out pretty early.
Yeah, Jake Bowman is who I was thinking of.
Who is it?
So,
Jake who?
Jake Bowman is who Joe Graff Jr. is going to be working with. So I guess between Joe and Jake was that when Jake wins his first five races, then Joe Graff Jr. is going to come over. Whoever's running Joe Graff's program is also going to help Jake. So,
very cool.
You know, yeah. So. You know, that's
going to
be
those races.
Oh yeah, he's. I think he's going to be big for the program.
Well, that's Ryan Sieg's team. RSS Racing is who he's with this year. So that's pretty cool. Okay.
There's a lot there.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Sharon. Where are we at? Oh, and then your cousin Jeb Burton. Gosh, felt bad for him. Finished 22nd after the season he had last year, but I'm sure he'll bounce back.
He'll bounce back. Yeah, give him a little time here. He'll bounce back. He's with a different team this year, so we'll have to see what happens. I am. Roger Carruth had a 21st place finish. I know you mentioned you had a chance to talk to him. The highest finishing rookie of the race, it looks like, was Chandler Smith, who finished in fourth place. Let's look at the points for the Cup Series. For the Xfinity Series. So.
Okay. Are the points are?
This is after two races.
After two races, so far we got Austin Hill leading the points again.
Mm-hmm.
So he kept his points from Daytona all the way here to Auto Club. And then the second, we got John Hunter Nemechek, who basically Austin Hill and John Hunter have already locked in. They're already locked in for the chase.
Yep.
So, and then we go down, and Justin Allgaier is in third, who was another one that was up and down yesterday too. Allgaier had some good runs. I thought he might have had a shot at the win. And then fourth is Chandler Smith, which is, like you said, the highest finishing rookie. Fifth is Riley Herbst. Sixth is Cole Custer, even with the bad finish that he had yesterday. Seventh is Sam Meyer. Eighth is Joe Graff Jr. Ninth is Josh Berry. And then rounding out the top ten is Ryan Sieg.
Now, let me just ask your question here. Riley Herbst and Cole Custer are teammates this year. I'm thinking that's a good thing.
It is. You know what? I talked to Joe, Cole's dad, a little bit, you know, about that. You know, he was real excited, you know, that Riley, of course, he was happy, you know, that Riley signed back on. And Riley and Cole know each other from Irwindale because they raced against each other. So it's not like they're... You know, it's not like they're, you know, they've never known each other, you know. Riley, Cole, and I guess you could say Noah Gragson, you know, along
mm-hmm.
with along with
Blaine.
Last year's, no, not Blaine. Blaine was kind of out of it, but Zane
oh,
Smith
okay.
was part of that little group too. So, it's kind of neat, to see that Riley and Cole are, our teammates this year.
Mm-hmm. I think it is kind of cool to see that. Parker Retzlaff was the next rookie. I've been really impressed with him. He comes from Wisconsin, and I think he's really got a great career ahead of him if he can get the support behind him. I think we're going to see really great things for him as time goes on here. He was real impressive in the Daytona race.
Yeah, yes, he was. And another race that I missed.
And I think he finished 11th in the race here at – or no, he – hold on. I thought it was 11th. Let me look here. Parker finished 20th. I'm sorry. I got him mixed up with Parker Kligerman. Okay.
Yeah, there he is.
Any other thoughts about the race here with these guys in the Xfinity Series?
You kind of felt bad. They had to run late at night. Not late at night, but they had to run at night. Their cars were all set up for, to run during the day. Of course, Saturday they had a 2 o'clock start. Instead of, this 5 o'clock, in the evening. So, they raced under the lights, which was, it was kind of surreal because, usually the only ones that raced under the lights at Auto Club was IndyCar.
Oh, wow.
The very last IndyCar race we had was under the lights.
I know that John Hunter Nemechek was told not to do a burnout with his car because they have to use those same cars that they used at Auto Club out at, is it Las Vegas or Phoenix? I know one of those
Phoenix.
Next two tracks. Phoenix. Yeah,
yeah,
they're going to use the same
yeah.
car out at Phoenix. So they had to take good care of that car.
Yeah, he didn't do a burnout. We were all waiting for it. He went around, did a victory lap, came in, grabbed the flag, did his interview, and then he just drove straight up in the victory lane and that was it.
Yeah.
My burnout. We're all waiting for a good burnout. Like Kyle Busch burned it down. But John Hunter Nemechek, he just.
Now, do you know Mason Maggio? He's going to make a debut with MBM Motorsports out at Las Vegas. Xfinity Series.
Wow. It's going to be a good show at Las Vegas, especially since the trucks are coming back. You get to see the trucks and Xfinity along with the Cup cars, and then so Saturday night they'll have short track racing over at the Bullring. So there'll be a lot of racing going on this weekend coming up in Las Vegas.
Yes, indeed. Okay, we'll go ahead and get started with our Cup Series review here. The winner there was Kyle Busch, 37 years of age, driving the number 8 Lucas Oil Chevrolet for Richard Childress Racing. Two races in, and he's got his first win already. Randall Burnett is his crew chief this year. It was his 61st victory in 644 Cup Series races. His first top 10 finish this season, and his fifth victory and 17th top 10 finish in 24 races at Auto Club Speedway. I've got some more stats there for Kyle in just a minute, but Chase Elliott finished second, posting his fourth top 10 finish in 7 races at Auto Club Speedway. And his first top 10 finish this season, Ross Chastain finished third for his first top 10 finish in 5 races at Auto Club. Ty Gibbs in 16th was the highest finishing rookie. With his win today, Kyle Busch now has won a Cup Series race in 19 consecutive seasons, breaking a tie with Richard Petty for first all-time, who had won the race for 18 consecutive seasons from 1960 to 1977. So Kyle Busch is certainly on his way to being up there with the greats. Also with his win, Kyle and Kurt Busch now have a combined 95 Cup Series wins, making them the winningest brothers in NASCAR history, breaking the tie with Bobby and Donnie Allison. So some big milestones there for Kyle Busch with his win out there at Auto Club Speedway. Also, just if I can get to the page here in just a minute. The next race, where's the, here we go. Okay, Kyle Busch, his era at Richard Childress Racing began 3 weeks ago at the L.A. Coliseum, but the coronation was reserved for Sunday's Pala Casino 400 and the last NASCAR Cup Series race at Auto Club Speedway. He grabbed the lead from Ross Chastain on lap 165 and regained it on lap 180 at the end of a cycle of green flag pit stops. As the race ran under green for the final 55 laps, he crossed the finish line on lap 200 with a 2.998 second advantage over runner-up Chase Elliott. Kyle Busch won that race to win his fifth Auto Club Speedway race and 61st win, and the first with Richard Childress Racing. Then it was Chase Elliott, Ross Chastain, Daniel Suarez, Kevin Harvick, Denny Hamlin, Brad Keselowski, Alex Bowman, Austin Dillon, and Joey Logano rounding out the top 10. He took the lead with 20 laps left and pulled away to win by almost 3 seconds. The pole sitter Christopher Bell was involved in a restart accident on lap 87 that collected 10 cars and was the largest accident ever at Auto Club Speedway. He was unable to continue. He ended up finishing 32nd. Stages 1 and 2 were won by Ross Chastain. There were 28 lead changes among 13 drivers, 8 cautions, and 38 yellow flag laps. Your thoughts about the top 10 finishers here?
Yeah, I'll tell you, it was a dominating win by Kyle Busch. You know, it was nice to see Kevin Harvick, you know, grab the top five, you know, especially this is his last, you know, year in Cup. Kevin did, I'm pretty sure he did need a couple of laps. And, Ross Chastain, you know, continues to, you know, to be a threat.
Yeah.
You know,
Just Ross Chastain, but Trackhouse Racing.
Yeah, Trackhouse Racing as a whole. For a while there, his teammate, Daniel Suarez was up there. But of course, you know, he did grab the top five finish, you know, finishing fourth. But yeah, Trackhouse is really looking really dominant. It's good to see Brad Keselowski, you know, pick up a top 10 win, especially after the season he had last year. You know, then the bad luck that he had at Daytona, it looked like he was going to get the Daytona 500 win. And then, say, through Kyle Busch, it looked like he was going to get the Daytona 500 win. You know, instead, you know, he picks up the win at Auto Club, which is a historic win, you know, being the last Cup driver to ever say, you know, that he won on the 2 mile circuit since back in 1997 when the track opened, when they first had the first Cup race.
Yeah.
It was Jeff Gordon, you know, that got the first win, you know, at Auto Club. So, you know, Kyle Busch can, you know, say, you know, he was the last winner, you know, on the 2 mile, you know, once they take the track down.
Yep. Now, a few more people were caught up in accidents in the Cup Series here. AJ Allmendinger on lap 75 was taken out by an accident. Eric Almirola on lap 86, followed by Tyler Reddick and Ryan Preece on lap 87, all taken out by accidents. And on lap 88, it was Christopher Bell taken out with an accident. Then Ty Dillon had an engine issue, taking him out of the race on lap 140, as did Bubba Wallace on lap 172, also an engine issue. So unfortunately, those guys did not get the finishes they were hoping for, but were caught up in accidents or engine issues.
Yes, and even Eric Almirola went out early too.
So
Stewart Haas Racing lost two cars early, and was, basically on the heels of Kevin Harvick, hoping, to grab that, to grab a win or, grab a good finish, along with Chase Briscoe, who also finished. Actually, Chase was the last car to finish on the lead lap, so.
He struggled all day.
Yeah, he did struggle all day. Him and Eric Jones both struggled all day,
It was a long day for both of those drivers.
It was a long day for everybody that was at the track yesterday.
Yeah, I bet it was. Okay, let's go ahead and talk about the points.
Okay, then the points after first two races. Of course, we know that Ricky Stenhouse and Kyle Busch, already have they've already locked their way into the
playoffs,
into the chase, but playoffs. But the points are as Ross Chastain leads the points, Joey Logano in second, Alex Bowman in third, Kevin Harvick in fourth, and Daniel Suarez rounds out the top five. And then from there we go to Chris Buescher in sixth, Ricky Stenhouse seventh, Kyle Busch behind him in eighth, Denny Hamlin in ninth, and Brad rounds out the top 10 in points. And of course, we know
I sense that RFK is having a much better year this year.
Oh yeah, they are. I mean, Brad looks like he's a lot more focused than what he was last year. I think making the transition from Penske to the ownership role to being a driver, I think it took a lot of his. I know Kevin Harvick had talked about it when he had Kevin Harvick racing when he had the truck team, and he said it was hard to focus on his Cup Series because he had the other team, because he had the truck team, and it was hard to focus. But when you see Denny Hamlin, Hamlin is Hamlin, but. It doesn't seem to affect him too much, with running the 23X team. So, last year, we've seen him, still make the chase, have a good outlook and all that. So, and then of course, Kyle Larson went out way early in the race. He was trying to make it up, but there was nothing there.
Yeah. He had a rough, go of it from the beginning.
Yeah, he's had a rough 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Kyle Larson is sitting 24th in points right now.
Hard to believe.
Yeah. And Ryan Preece is sitting 34th.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised to see that, too. We'll have to see what happens with the rest of the season. Sal, I want to get to, because you were at Auto Club Speedway, and it's such an historic moment with this being the last races there. I wanted to get your thoughts about this Cup Series race, or just your weekend in general. What was the highlight of the weekend for you? And then after that, I know you mentioned earlier that there were some sad moments as well. When did that first sad moment hit you?
I don't know. It was because I've been going to that track since the first open. I think one of the highlights was probably when the green flag dropped to start the Cup race. But one of the saddest moments was this was the last five wide. Salute to the fans. That we have.
Oh, that
we
was
started
so cool
that.
To see. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we started that for COVID, when COVID hit, that we didn't have any fans, that's when the track started doing the five wide salute, you know, to the fans that were missing. So that's when we started, you know, with the five wide salute, and we kept it ever since. You know, it was neat, you know, to see it. You know, of course, we only do it one lap, but still, you know, it's something, you know, that's become, you know, it's become synonymous, you know, with Auto Club Speedway.
Yep.
You know, how you said, walking out of the media center to the car, you know, just knowing, you know, that all that's going to, it's not going to be there again. You know, I mean, you know, it's surreal just walking around the track. You know, you know, we made the whole circuit around doing photos all the way around the 2 miles, you know, and you get back to the front and you think, gosh, next time the track's open, it's going to be a half mile. It's going to be like doing Urindale, you know, Urindale the half mile, you know, and it's just not going to be the same. You know, you look around, you know, all the different things that we've gone through throughout the years. You know, and so some of the stands, they've already taken down part of the stand that turns 1 and 2, so all that was missing. It was kind of weird to see the restrooms. And before, there was the stands went over the restrooms, and there was concessions. And now it's just the restrooms out in the open, you know, because they had already started taking down some of the stands. And, you know, you know, just see the fans' reaction, you know, as you're walking, you know, as you're walking around, you know, the, you know, you know, the reaction, you know, on the restarts, you know, and, you know, the fans that were in the, that had the pit passes, you know, walking up and down the, you know, pit lane, you know, they were all, you know, getting their last pictures, you know, before the race starts and, you know, taking pictures of pit lane, the stands, you know, then of course, then we had the snow, the whole mountains were just full of snow. We haven't had that. And it was it was weird. Going to be crazy.
Well, Sal,
the next year.
I know you've got a lot on your plate right now, but I got to tell you, it would be really cool if you could write an article about that.
Yeah, you know, Sharon, I'll try to put something together. I mean,
okay.
There's a lot of I've had a lot of history there. You know, I mean,
you have,
you know,
I think it would be good to document that and you know the fact that you were at that last race.
You know, and then, you know, seeing the transition from Gillian Zucker to Dave Allen, you know, as the track president.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even she, one of my, what was I going to say? He's one of my best friends who does all the painting on the track, you know, does all the walls and paints the grass and all that, you know. He had a surgery, so he couldn't do none of the painting, but he was still there yesterday. I ran into him. You know,
You were with Will Lester too.
Oh no, yeah, oh yeah. Me and Will sat together in the photo room. You know,
oh,
we were talking
okay.
about it. You know, the days of when after the cup race they would bring pizza. When Dave Talley was there, Dave would bring he'd order like 25 pizzas for media, and then they fill up a trash can full of beer and sodas. And yesterday there was. It wasn't there. I mean, it was weird. It was like everyone's waiting for the pizza and beer, and there was no pizza, no beer, no sodas, no nothing.
I think it would be a missed opportunity for us to not document that, Sal. So if you can put something together with some photos, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I got a lot of old photos of the track and got some new ones. And
some from this weekend.
Oh, yeah, I got some from this weekend, so.
And I know you're going to be out at Phoenix Raceway, but not you won't be at Las Vegas, but you'll be at Phoenix, right?
Yeah, I'm going to try and make Phoenix. With all this rain and everything, my job at the port got pushed back. This is my priority. It's my port job. I got to get it done. And if we don't get it done, then I can't go. So it's
okay.
This weather's playing havoc on everything.
It's good to have you back on the show, Sal. I think this is your first show of the season so far, right?
Yeah, it's good to be back. I mean, it was a long off season. It was one that I really needed. So, looking forward to the rest of the season.
Yeah, me too. had a good conversation with Greg Van Alts here tonight, and we'll be back next Monday night, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, for our review of the racing out at Las Vegas. So thanks, Sal. We'll look forward to talking to you then, if not before.
Okay, you guys all have a good, all right, have a good weekend, safe weekend. We'll talk to you guys next week.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
All right. We are at the top of the hour, and that means it is time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off with our Fanfa Racing crew. We have a couple of the guys here already, starting with Mike Orzel. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Good to be back.
All right. And we also have Jay Huseman here tonight. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. Good to talk to you yet again. And I know your voice sounds better from what I heard earlier. Yeah, you sound better. So I was going to say it's me and Mike one-on-one, but you can jump in and interfere tonight.
Yeah, tonight I can kind of do it. I will tell you, though, it is still catching once in a while. So a couple of times I had to stop just to kind of drink some water and wet my throat again, so that could still happen. But I'm excited to get into the NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off here tonight. So let's go ahead and start with you, Mike. You get the first hot topic.
Sure. This is secondhand. I didn't listen to the podcast myself. I saw a thread on Reddit regarding it. But on Denny Hamlin's Actions Detrimental podcast, he said that NASCAR is looking into what he described as grooved tires. And the idea here is to take away some of the grip that the new cars got with the wider tires to make the cars, the word he used was out of control. And I think the intention in there is to try and make it more of a driver's car again, as opposed to just having so much grip. I was just wondering what everyone thinks.
All right. Jay, your thoughts?
Well, I would have to defer to Mike. I hate to do that and give him any kind of thinking that he has knowledge, but I wouldn't know as far as when, as a driver, it comes to the tire of the effect of that tire on it. So I really don't know. If a driver is suggesting it, I hope that NASCAR will look into it and experiment with it and figure it out if it's something that is beneficial.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I have to wait and hear from Mike as well. But my first thought when I saw that is what's wrong with the wider tire? I thought part of the idea of having the wider tire was to keep the car grounded and more surface on the track so that we didn't have cars out of control. And why do you want to have cars out of control? I know you mentioned it's to give the drivers more control of the car, but I think we're talking about more accidents too. And I know these cars are safer. But why do we want more accidents? I've never been a big fan of the accidents on the track. I want to watch the racing. So I like the idea of the wider tire so that I can watch them race out there. But we're back to you, Mike, and I think Jay and I are both wanting to know your thoughts.
Well, the way I understand, like I said, I didn't listen to the podcast itself, so this is secondhand. And I don't think he meant out of control in the crash in the car sense of the word. I think the intention here is along the same lines as going with a reduced downforce aerodynamic package on it. So the cars, you maintain control of a race car via a combination of mechanical grip from the tires gripping the racetrack, as well as aerodynamics of the body and spoilers and whatnot of the car gripping the air, right? So when you reduce downforce on the car, you're reducing that aerodynamic grip. And a lot of drivers have said that the lower downforce package, they tend to prefer cars like that. Not that they're out of control in the crashing sense, but they're able, the better drivers, a professional race car driver, the very, very best professional race car drivers are the guys who are able to take the car and put it right up against that razor's edge and hold it there, right? So the finer and more difficult you can make that razor's edge be, I think that's really what the drivers are seeing, is where they can allow their skills to shine. So reducing the mechanical grip of the tires grabbing the racing surface, I think the intention here is to have the same effect as reducing downforce, but doing it with tire grip as opposed to aerodynamics. So with going with the wider tire, yes, it created more control for the car, but I think the drivers, at least my understanding of it, is the drivers believe that maybe that, I like to talk about pendulum swinging, right? So maybe the pendulum has swung a little bit too far in the grip direction, and in order to put a little bit more control in the hands of the drivers and make that razor's edge a little bit more of a thing that the drivers can control and mess with, that will, in theory at least, produce better racing where the best drivers are able to get the most out of their car. And I think that's the intention there. Whether it's a great idea or not, I don't know. NASCAR has gone back and forth with aerodynamic stuff over the past forever, putting downforce on the cars, taking downforce off the cars, and it seems like it's not so much a matter of whether it's there or not, it's how much of a change it is from one package to the next. And it seems like whenever there's a change, the racing improves for a while. We saw that in, I think it was going from the 2015 season to the 2016 season. 2015 was a very high downforce package on the car versus 2016, very low downforce. The racing, especially the beginning half of the 2016 season, was outstanding. But then the engineers and the drivers started to really wrap their heads around how to set up a car for that aerodynamic package, and it put the control of the race back in the hands of the engineers and the teams setting up the car, and not so much in the hands of the drivers actually on the racetrack driving the car. And then when the pendulum went the other way with the high downforce, low horsepower package that we saw in 2018, again, there was an improvement in the racing for a little while, and then when they wrapped their heads around it, the quality of the racing dropped. So I think we'd see the same thing here, where they would take away grip from the cars by going with these grooved tires, and then the racing would improve for a little while. But I think what would happen is everyone would get used to it, and the racing quality would stabilize at a certain – whatever the product is, it would stabilize, and then we'd be asking for some other change, more grip, more aerodynamic, whatever. And I think that's what it really comes down to, is kind of this cat-and-mouse game between the rules package – and the ability of the teams to maximize the setup for the car. And the more the teams are able to maximize the setup, the less ability the drivers have to influence the outcome of the race. So that's kind of my concern here, is we'd make this change, and it would be a temporary improvement. Not that the racing is bad, but we're always looking for ways to make it better. So we'd see a temporary improvement for a little while, and then things would stabilize, and we'd be crying for something different.
Okay, Jay, your follow-up.
Well, Mike definitely had some knowledge and shared it, and I appreciate that. I understand a little bit better now when you're talking about the mechanical versus the aero grip, and essentially, yeah, then of trying to push it back into the driver's hands. The thought of it'll put them out of control isn't as extreme as what I initially thought. You know, Denny Hamlin was referencing, but it is to, you know, put the car a little bit more on edge, which means the driver has to have more control and skill. So I am in kind of favor of that. And I would say, like I said, of test it and see what it does and what the driver's response to it is before they move forward. But I would definitely look into it.
By testing?
Yeah, by having them do some tests and see how out of control it is or whatever. And again, I know you got some, just like several things, like Mike said, when the aerodynamic package that put it on a razor's edge, that drivers wanted it back in their hands, more of their control versus the mechanical grip. If the car sticks and isn't going to get away from you, I can go out and sit in that and ride around and push the throttle.
Yeah, the explanation is a good one. The other factor of this, according to the post that you put up, is that NASCAR said that they're not going to increase horsepower, but by doing this, it gives the feel that there's more horsepower for the drivers, meaning that they can take that car and, you know, push forward, I guess. But I agree with you, Mike, in that, you know, we see a pattern that does happen in NASCAR, and the engineers and the experts behind the scenes, they figure these things out, and you know, everybody catches up and then we're right back to where we started again. The other pattern that I see is that a lot of times you have one or two drivers that are able to do things with the car that the other drivers don't seem to be doing until the end of the race. And that's something that I kind of get frustrated with sometimes is people not racing the whole race, but, you know, the strategy that they put into being there when they need to be there in order to get a better finish. It sounds like a good idea from a couple of perspectives, and I'm going to kind of – I have mixed feelings about this. The idea of having a groove tire is kind of a cool idea of bringing it back to the days when you brought the car from home and drove it, because those are the kind of tires that I think they had on some of those cars way back when. But another part of me is saying, can't we try – If the width of the tire is making that much of an impact, can't we try maybe incrementally decreasing the width of that tire until you find that fine edge that you're talking about that puts it more into the driver's hands? But again, the same thing is going to happen. The engineers and tire specialists are going to figure it all out, and we'll be right back where we were before. So I don't know if it's a good idea or not. Some parts of it sound good, but I have reservations. We'll just put it that way. Mike, you get the last word.
Well, this is kind of like the discussion we had last year where, yes, we want to see change, we want to see evolution, but there's always the risk of too much too quickly too soon. And I think this might be going down that road. Like Jay said, they would have to do a lot of testing here. Part of the advantage of slick tires, not just that they provide the most grip. The reason we don't see tread on race car tires generally is because they don't grab with the tread. So we have tread on our passenger car tires on the street because those tires see a variety of conditions, especially wet weather, and the tread of those tires is what channels the water away from the tire so the rubber can actually make contact with the road. If you look at the rain tires that they use for NASCAR and other series that run in the rain, those tires look much more similar to street tires because they're doing the exact same thing street tires are doing. And that also brings up the other concern that we see. On rain races, the biggest decision that teams have to make if the track is drying out is when do they transition from the wet weather tires to the dry weather tires. And it's not just a matter that the dry weather tires give you more grip, but the other issue is that the wet weather tires are not designed to handle the kind of loads that the dry weather slick tires are. With that much lateral force, it's trying to rip the tire apart. Yes, the tire is rolling forward, but in the turn, you have a lot of shear force. The car is trying to move to the side. So it's trying to rip that tire from one side to the other. And not having that tread there, it helps hold the whole tire together. It would take a substantial amount of testing on the part of NASCAR and Goodyear to make sure that they're able to develop, if they're going to go with a grooved tire, to develop one that's able to handle the kind of loads that these tires see on dry weather conditions. It's one thing to take away grip from the tires, but it's another thing to make them so they come together. I'm all for having reduced grip if it produces better racing. However, we saw a lot of races last year, even with just regular slick tires, where the tires that were brought to the racetrack weren't sufficient for what was being done, and there were a lot of tire failures that put a lot of guys into the fence, and that can get dangerous, obviously. If tires are failing unexpectedly, we see a lot of hard crashes because of that. So if they're going to go down this road, I would like to see some extensive testing on it. Definitely not something I think we're going to see this season, but maybe in future seasons, if they're able to successfully test it and implement it, it might be something they can consider, especially as teams get more used to this Gen 7 car. We saw it in California yesterday. It was a good race, but it wasn't the banger that we had last year. And I'm thinking this year, the second year of the Gen 7 car, the teams and the engineers have had a year to wrap their head around it, and I think we might end up seeing a drop in some of the quality of the racing because it's now going to be more in the hands of the engineers and the setup as opposed to it being brand new and in the hands of the drivers. So this is definitely going to need to get tested and thought through very carefully before we go and make a change. Especially, we got to make sure that the safety changes that they made to the car in the offseason are truly sufficient to make sure that if we do something that's going to increase the risk of crashes, i.e. taking grip away from the tires, that we do make sure that the car is safe so if something unexpected happens, nobody gets hurt in the process.
Exactly. Yeah, Good points. Okay, Jay, you get the next hot topic. I think he's on mute.
Yeah, am I still there?
Okay, yep, now I hear you.
Okay, yeah, I don't know, my mute button or something got mixed up there. But we got to thank Sal for this. I heard as I was still listening to Greg Van Alst's interview there, talking about the Sioux Chief Showdown going away.
Yeah.
I can't believe all of us missed that. I did find the article. There's one from Front Stretch, I believe, is the one I found and shared on the chat page. So, yeah, no more Sioux Chief Showdown.
Yeah. Okay. Mike, your thoughts about taking the Sioux Chief Showdown out of the equation in the 20-race schedule for the Arkham Menard Series? It was a championship within a championship.
Yeah, I don't really follow the ARCA series as closely as y'all do. If an ARCA race is on in conjunction with any of the big NASCAR series races, I'll tend to watch it, but I don't follow ARCA as closely as y'all do. I know the Sioux Chief Showdown was kind of a big deal, and it's always a shame to see big marquee events go away. It doesn't matter whether it's a Sioux Chief Showdown or, you know, if the Chili Bowl went away. Obviously, that'd be a huge thing in that sector of the racing world. So it's always a shame to see stuff like that go away. Hopefully, they're able to find some sort of an alternative that keeps that competitiveness and the prestige there. But whether it's a venue issue, it's probably a money issue. It's always a money issue. Whatever is driving this, hopefully they're able to find some sort of mitigation where it doesn't end up being a net loss for racing as a whole.
Okay. You know, I was shocked, too, because somehow I missed that news as well, Jay, that they had discontinued the 10-race championship within the main ARCA Menard Series. I kind of enjoyed it. I thought it brought different drivers to the track and to compete. And I thought it was a good developmental thing, too, for those drivers, because it tended to be the drivers that would come in just for the Sioux Chief Showdown races, they were coming in to kind of transition to the ARCA Menard Series. And it's drivers that are used to racing on those shorter tracks. There were other tracks, you know, that were on there, but I thought it brought a little more competition into the ARCA Menard Series and gave a different driver a chance to be the champion, somebody other than who was competing for the championship on the ARCA Menard Series level. So I think that could hurt in the long run, again, from a developmental sense of bringing new drivers into the ARCA Menard Series. They have a 20-race schedule for the ARCA Menard Series on all kinds of different tracks, from Daytona to, Toledo, the short tracks. It's all different kinds of tracks, and it's a good transition for drivers that are looking to come into the NASCAR top three, namely either the Truck Series or the Xfinity Series, because it gives them that chance to race on some of those tracks before they get to NASCAR's top three. And it gave them a transitional role to come into the ARCA Menard Series by having that Sioux Chief Showdown integrated into the ARCA Menard Series. I hope that's making sense, what I'm saying here. Those of you who follow the ARCA Menard Series will probably follow what I'm saying. It's sad to see it go. I thought it was a good program. I do hope, as Mike said, that they come up with an alternative to that that will serve that same developmental type of a role that encourages other drivers to take part in the ARCA Menard Series. So, Jay, I'm curious to know your thoughts while I get another drink of water here.
All right, go ahead. And truthfully, from the one perspective, a lot, you and I are going to have a lot of the same things to say here as far as we liked it and what we did. I do want to read through a couple of the highlights from the article. It says Sioux Chief is still 100% involved in ARCA, and they're 100% supportive of the series. as well as they were in support of the showdown, but we quickly decided to end it, and that was from Charles Krall, and he is the art communications manager. And the plan, the idea itself was allowed young drivers ages 15 to 17 to compete for a championship in the platform, as well as merging drivers from the East and West into the ARCA Menard Series, the East and the West and the ARCA Menard Series, to run for another championship. However, they said it never worked out in the way in which it was intended. Krall specifically noted how the showdown detracted from competitors competing for the East Series championship. With it being eliminated, series officials say they are already seeing the dividends by eliminating it, as five drivers announced as running full-time in the East, and those are William Sawlich from JGR, LeVar Scott from Rev Racing, 25, Sean Hingarani with VMS, and then Zachary Tinkle and D.L. Wilson. So that's their answer as to why. I understand what they're saying, and I would have to have all the numbers and all the information they have. I feel like the ones that were going to compete for the East did, and then additionally ran the extra few that were the combination events. But they feel like it detracted. I can't argue with them because I don't have all the numbers of which drivers did exactly what over these past 3 years it ran from 20 to 2022. I don't fully agree with that, and I also want to take it to the level of, if these young guys are in the East and they're on all the short tracks, because that's why they can't run the main ARCA Menard Series, is they're not old enough to run on the big tracks, they're competing against these other 15 to 17-year-olds. If they have the opportunity to run against the top ARCA Menard Series, or sometimes even truck, Xfinity, or Cup drivers that come off for one-off events, they get to run against some great competition and figure out where they're at against the top level. So I still think there's some value and benefit to it. I do now understand, at least to some degree, of why they took it away and what their thinking was, and I'm sure they have numbers to back it up. But I still think there's huge value to it in what they could maybe still find a way to make it work. And as a fan, Sharon, and any of the Fan for Racing fans that listen to it, Sharon and I were big fans of it and like to watch that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mike, does that give you any insights here?
It does. I'm going to have to defer to Jay on this one. He's read into it and obviously knows a whole lot more about the event than I do, even coming out of the gate. The case that he made, well, that he read more or less from the article, it does make a lot of sense. ARCA, yes, it's a beginner series, but it's a very expensive series to run. And it makes sense that if we can reduce costs and reduce difficulty for people to participate and reduce those barriers to entry, that might end up being a net benefit. The ARCA's had a bad problem over the past decade, maybe even 20 years, where the cost of entry to supposedly this entry-level racing series has continued to climb and climb and climb, and as a result, we've seen the field shrink in ARCA. There's been a bit of a rebound over the past couple of years, but they're still nowhere near what they used to be 10, 15 years ago. So if this does reduce barriers to entry for more people and more teams to be able to participate in ARCA because they can afford to do so, that might end up being a net benefit, even though we do lose a big event like the Sioux Chiefs Showdown.
Okay, and let me just kind of clarify what they're saying here. There's the ARCA Menard Series, and they run 20 races. Inside the ARCA Menard Series was the Sioux Chief Showdown, which was half of those races. Then there's the ARCA West, and there's the ARCA East. What they're saying in this article is that they noticed that the participation in the ARCA East was, they felt, diminished because of drivers participating in that Sioux Chief Showdown as part of the ARCA Menard Series. So what they're trying to do is eliminate the Sioux Chief Showdown so that those drivers can move back to the ARCA East Series. So a lot of times people use ARCA as an umbrella for all three series. But there's definitely three distinctive, different series within, under that Arkham and Art series. And it's that 15 to 17-year-old, the younger drivers, that I felt were benefiting from the Sioux Chief Showdown and being able to race against more competitive drivers as kind of a development of their opportunity as a race car driver. What they're doing now is they're pushing those 15 to 17-year-olds to a series, the ARCA East, which is a good series. And it is true that that series has kind of languished over the last few years and has not been as competitive as the ARCA West series. ARCA West has more races on their schedule. They have more drivers participating. ARCA East, the driver participation has languished over the last couple of years. They have fewer races. Sal and I were talking about how it was disappointing to see so few races on that ARCA Menards Series East schedule. So I guess this is an attempt to try to revitalize the ARCA East so that it is similar to what's going on out in the West with those drivers out there. excuse me. One of the things that does happen, and we've seen more and more, is that some of the ARCA East drivers will go out to the West, say Phoenix Raceway, and participate in the ARCA West event out there just to get that experience of racing against those drivers because it is a little bit more competitive. Excuse me. So I guess in reading the explanation here, I see this as an attempt to revitalize that ARCA East program that has languished. And I just think it's at the cost of driver development in racing with the ARCA Menards Series drivers throughout the season. So they'll have to look for maybe another way to make that happen, but we'll see how that progresses. If it works out to revitalize the ARCA East program, then maybe it is a good idea because it does need to be revitalized. Jay?
Yeah, and as I read that, I want to add one more thing at the bottom there, but and that's where I said I do understand their point, and I say I'm sure they have numbers to back it up with the drivers I mentioned that are specifically now entered into the East and not just the Sioux Chief Showdown. I didn't see that, but again, I didn't track everybody and then who didn't do the East Series, other East Series that weren't ones. There are still going to be five combination races within that main series for 2023. Phoenix Raceway, as Sharon mentioned, is a combo race with the ARCA Menards Series and the ARCA West, which is the West season opener. Then Iowa Speedway,
Lucas Oil. I've got to make an announcement real quick. Hold on.
Go ahead. Yep.
Okay, we're at that time of the night where we let listeners know, especially if you're a first-time listener, that we're going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 Eastern time, but we will continue recording the rest of this conversation, and that part of the recording will be available on our podcast. We just don't want the first-time listeners to be taken off guard with us going off air in the middle of a sentence. And just wanted to alert everybody so that they know what's going on. So I'll go out on social media, Twitter and Facebook, to let you know when that podcast is available. All you have to do is fast forward to that two-hour mark to hear the rest of our conversation here. So, Jay, go ahead, because this is really good to hear.
Yeah, okay. So, again, the season opener for the West is a combo with the main ARCA Menards Series, and then the East has four: Iowa Speedway, Lucas Oil, Indianapolis Raceway Park. We need one more word in that title. The Milwaukee Mile and Bristol Motor Speedway are four combination races with the East. Now, as I said, I do understand their point and what they're trying to do. As Sharon said, the East certainly could have been boosted back up to where it was when they were not running this. However, as I said, I think there is still that value, and Sharon mentioned it, of racing against some bigger, better competition, the top guys. Just mentioned, if we're specifically talking about the East, then maybe cut it down to a four or five instead of 10, and not have the as great amount of payoff for that, where they still, if they really want to run, you know, a big championship, they got to do the East, but could still tie it in. You know, Sharon said maybe there's a way they can work it in. And I think they could then cut it down to those five races or even the four and just have it a four race. I know the, and I can't, General Tire shootout, that's not the right word. They have a four race where you got to win or the best finish on a super speedway road course. That's
oh, yeah.
Only a four, and a,
Triple Crown.
So that's only a four race deal, and they get a, a championship for that, you know, minor, but still a championship. So I think they could still find a way to do it and still have these guys get back into the East full-time like they want. Another thing then of I would like to maybe see come back then, find that spot of the East-West battle. You know, we had those, and one year it happened to be there at Elko, Minnesota. I think it was at Iowa Speedway, or was it Chicago? I think it was Iowa Speedway.
Iowa.
That was always an that was always an interesting twist as well, where you had the East versus West. So I think there are some things that they could still do to get those, all the drivers together. So as Sharon, driver development, you know, I think I'm good. I'm beating the guys in the East. Well, let me go up against the main Arca Menards, and if there happens to be a Cup or a Truck Star, let me see how I rank against them and can compete against them. Find a middle ground. I think Mike and I talked about the pendulum. Okay, I understand. I validate their point. We need drivers back running full-time in the East in tougher competition or whatever there, but don't go all the way where, hey, we'll take it all the way. Find that middle ground. Stop the pendulum in the middle.
There you go. Okay, Mike, the next top topic for us.
Well, much was made about this past weekend being the last race, NASCAR race, at the current configuration of Auto Club Speedway in Fontana, California. And we've known it was coming for a few years, but even before the pandemic, there were plans announced that they were going to convert the property into a half-mile-ish short track, and there were some various diagrams of the track released. But NASCAR had been really tight-lipped about exactly what was going on with the property. Well, Adam Stern from Sports Business Journal reported this week that NASCAR closed on a deal to sell off the majority of that property to California area developers, and the estimated total sale price was $544 million, so over half $1 billion to sell off the large portion of land that the Fontana Auto Club Speedway currently sits on. It's unfortunate to see it go, but when you can put half $1 billion in your pocket, it kind of makes sense.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah, I caught this, I think it was on Morning Drive with Mike Begley and Pete Pistone. When people said, people are questioning, why are they doing this? Why not just repave the track, or why go make it into a short track? And there were a couple of different reasons and thoughts, but yeah, this came out today of something that was finally released of $544 million is a reason to do anything. I mean, you know, NASCAR's in the business of trying to make money and stay, you know, keep their brand alive. That makes a lot of sense, which we didn't have all the information. I know there's still some things about then what property they're keeping and what needs to be done to make it a short track that hasn't been fully secured yet. So I know there's still some questions there, but that's going to go back into NASCAR. That could go get divided then into purses, other race purses or whatever.
Is that
you
still
can't
a
argue with that.
The property was owned by NASCAR.
It did go back to NASCAR, yeah.
Yeah, so
I don't remember when.
Roger Penske built a place, but it was owned and sold by NASCAR.
Gotcha. Okay.
I couldn't remember, when Penske had let it go, it was under NASCAR's control, but you're right, Penske was the developer behind it initially. So with that, again, I'm in favor of a short track. I know we had talked about what to do until they get that going again and where to go, whether they leave that market. And that was something that got brought up as we talked about. We know that's got to be in a warm state, but through COVID, we didn't get to go out to California, that market area, for 2 years, I think, during COVID. We can survive if we have to go a year or so without it again and put that race somewhere else rather than trying to force it and find a spot in California to do it. But you can't blame NASCAR for this. I mean, like I said, of who is going to say, no, we don't want $544 million. You know, with no matter what it be, we talk about business decisions of letting a driver go or a sponsor walking away. $544 million. I mean, there's a reason behind it, and it's not greed. That's, you're in business to do that exactly thing, make money. So I think they made a good decision, and they're still trying to work with it and create a short track there and keep it in that venue. So I'm all for it. However it comes out, I hope it does develop it with the short track, but we'll have to wait and see on that. But that at least explained why in that particular case. And parents happened to be here. Dad asked me that question of, well, why haven't they done that with Chicagoland? And we'll leave that for another time, because I know that one hasn't come to fruition like it was supposed to.
Yeah, it's been an interesting thing to follow, I will say that. When I first heard this, there was conversation about they sold like 90 acres, I guess it left them with 89 acres. And part of the discussion around that was that 89 acres is not enough land for them to have a short track and parking. They would need additional land to have parking. So the response was that they would lease land around the track for parking. But keep in mind, if you've already sold that to somebody else, how do you know that the land around the track is going to be available? Plus, there was a lot of concern, would 89 acres be enough acreage even for the short track? To have, you know, everything that you like to see at a short track with NASCAR. Now the rumor, and I will say Sal was at the track this weekend, and he seems to think that there is the possibility that there might not even be a track at that location. And that the whole idea was to put that money toward, or to put that to make it more fan-friendly at the track. But it sounds like they're limiting themselves on being able to even do that. So now I have concerns about whether or not there'll even be a short track there. I know we're waiting for an announcement about what they are doing. Sal did indicate that even before the race on Sunday, he saw right away that they had already started taking down some of the seating at that track, and that things that he was used to seeing were standing out kind of alone by themselves in the middle of nowhere because of things, the seating that was taken out. So this is going to be an interesting story to follow. I think there's a lot of speculation right now. I think it is possible, given that the sale is leaving them really short on land opportunity. I think the potential that we might have seen our last race there is a real possibility. However, having said that, they do need something somewhere, because I asked Sal if he thought that they could do a NASCAR race at Irwindale Speedway, which is very landlocked, by the way, and he said there's no way they'd have room for, parking at Irwindale either. He said they thought maybe Kern County, but he doesn't seem to think that that would be conducive to a NASCAR race either. For them to eliminate that race in that area would be a huge mistake. Maybe that's why they brought the Coliseum in there. I don't know. But I think it would be a huge loss if they allow that to happen where there is no track and that land is redeveloped. But I thought the same thing about Chicagoland Speedway, and I don't think they sold that land yet. So we'll have to see how this story continues to develop. Mike?
Well, Jay brought up a good point, in that this is a business, not just NASCAR, but racing in general is a business. And it's not just NASCAR that's feeling the pressure from this real estate development that's going on. Two recent examples on the east coast of the country that have fallen victim to real estate development are Myrtle Beach Speedway and Greenville Pickens Speedway, both in South Carolina. And when you're building a racetrack, you're in a difficult position. you need to have it close enough to a major metropolitan area, because you're going to have people show up to not just race on the track, but also to sell tickets to, in order to keep the lights on at the place. But the risk there is if that urban area that you build near begins to grow and develop, well, then there's going to be a demand for that property. And the thing that usually happens is the track gets surrounded by housing developments, and those people in those developments bought the cheap land next to the racetrack and pretended like they didn't think the racetrack would be a big noise problem. And they complain, and they moan, and they cry about the noise at the racetrack that they knew was there because it had been there for 50 years. And then they get the racetrack shut down. And even if the racetrack doesn't get shut down officially, what happens is the value of the property in the area, like it did around the Fontana area around Auto Club Speedway, the value of that land gets so high that if I'm sitting on this racetrack and I'm constantly getting pressured from the city council and people complaining, and, oh, by the way, I'm struggling to get people to show up and buy tickets, and I've got to deal with the drunks in the infield and the drunks in the grandstands and the drunks in the race cars. If I can sell the property and get out of all of that and put millions of dollars in my pocket, that's a pretty easy decision to make. It's unfortunate for us as race fans, but it also is kind of understandable about why a lot of these racetracks are selling to real estate development or other different means that end up that the racetrack gets shut down. It's unfortunate, but it's the reality of the situation, not just for Auto Club Speedway, but for a lot of racetracks around the country. It doesn't bode well for the future of local racing, because there's a lot of racetracks that are threatened by this. With you have the urban sprawl in the areas that used to be just pastures and farmland is now multi-million dollar per acre land that these racetrack owners are pressured into selling. And you can't, like Jay said, at some point you can't blame them for wanting to put that millions of dollars in their pocket at the same time of getting rid of all the headache of owning an unpopular racetrack. It's unfortunate, but it's the reality of the situation that we're in these days.
Okay, Jay.
Well, that's there's a couple of things. Again, you can't fault them for selling out for the money, and they had a plan of what to do with the short track. And this is why, as a team, we make a great team. Everybody's got a little bit of information. On the morning drive, they just said there was a glitch. I don't know if glitch is the right word. There was a holdup on moving forward with the short track, and Sharon provided some of the possible reasons for that. I didn't know it was about the outside parking, because the 90 acres they kept would use up if you got the short track in that, but it wasn't enough for parking. So great job by everybody bringing a little bit of information and knowledge, because I say the morning drive didn't specifically address that. With Sharon's concern about that, I think there are some possibilities, again, of already coming, and I know, Mike, you didn't get to talk about this the other night. I said I wanted to see Laguna Seca. Somebody brought up Long Beach and doing it in conjunction with the Long Beach Grand Prix. And I think the Chicago Street Race may have an impact on if that's the direction they go. Again, at this time, we thought it was for a temporary for a year or two until they got the short track ready. But if that doesn't develop, of what are they going to do? Again, as Sharon thankfully pointed out, my plan was not a good idea. Dad, I got a chuckle out of Dad when I said that. I suggested Iowa, and he's like, really? And I was like, yeah, Sharon pointed out it's not a good time of the year to be up in that area of the country. So that is another California option. And I say that would actually make sense if they're waiting to see how the Chicago Street Race goes. So they got options. You know, we did talk about a couple different ones, and maybe there is something new that comes out of the woodwork of this. I hope they still kind of push towards moving forward with the short track and can work that out. But is the LA Coliseum then going to take over that market and they move somewhere else? You know, maybe a little further north on the West Coast. Have to wait and see it. But overall, I think NASCAR made a good financial business decision and had a plan moving forward. They've got a hiccup now. Let them handle it, and we'll see what comes of it.
Yeah, I think this is kind of a fluid situation right now, and nobody really knows what's going to happen at this point, and we're just waiting for an official announcement to kind of come out. But I like your idea of Long Beach. I think that might be a nice solution. But it's another road course. I know we're worried about going overboard on the road courses now that we have so many on the schedule. That would be another road course to be put out there. I know they talked about New York being a street race as well. I don't know. We'll have to see what happens, and we'll wait until it comes out. But my first thought when I started hearing these rumors about there might not be a track, it was maybe that's why they decided to put this L.A. Coliseum idea out there. So I can't wait to see how it unfolds. Mike?
Well, regarding the Coliseum, there was a lot of discussion about that during that weekend, and a lot of the drivers were asked about it, and the pretty much a unanimous opinion from the drivers seemed to be they're okay with it being an exhibition race, but they don't think it'd be very good as a points race. At the end of the day, race car drivers are going to shut up if they're going to drive the race cars if you tell them that's where the points race is. But I'm going to have to defer to them. If they're saying that the competition for that would not be really conducive to a points race, I kind of have to agree. And after seeing 2 years of racing at the Coliseum, it's certainly entertaining, don't get me wrong. But from a serious competitive integrity kind of a standpoint, is it really what we want as a full 36 to 40 car field race for season-long points? I'm going to have to agree with the drivers. I don't think the Coliseum is somewhere we need to go for a points-paying race. But NASCAR is in a really tough spot here. They don't want to give up
Long
the Los Angeles Southern. Right. Well, and that's the thing, is they don't want to give up that Los Angeles Southern California market. But even Fontana wasn't exactly downtown Los Angeles. It was about an hour west of town there. It's not like it was that close. So NASCAR wants to get into these big city markets, but there's really nowhere to do it. You're not going to build a big racetrack in the middle of downtown Los Angeles or Chicago or any of these big cities that you want to go to. So now you're stuck doing either a street race like they're doing in Chicago or adapting a racetrack like Long Beach. And at Long Beach would take some tweaking. Turn 11 at Long Beach, that really tight hairpin towards the end, would be a big problem for stock cars. It's already tough enough for Indy cars. It'd be a big problem for stock cars. That's not something that can't be worked around, but it would have to be worked on. But like you said, we're already approaching critical mass for road courses. How much more do we want to put in there? And I would kind of consider a street course to be in that same category as a road course in terms of the type of racing that goes on there. Yes, they're somewhat different, but fundamentally they're much closer to a road course than they are to a traditional oval track. So the other side of that tug of war, though, is you have these traditional racetracks that the fans love but aren't in the big markets. North Wilkesboro Speedway is a great example. The fans have been crying for that place for years, and we finally got it back. We've got an all-star race going to North Wilkesboro in May. But North Wilkesboro is in the middle of freaking nowhere. It is not a major market. It's not going to be a major market. If once the novelty of North Wilkesboro Speedway wears off, if they go to the North Wilkesboro regularly, the novelty will wear off. And the reasons that the Cup Series left North Wilkesboro in the mid-90s will come roaring right back. It's the middle of nowhere. It has no infrastructure. Everyone who's going there is going to be traveling to go there, and they're going to get real sick of that trip really quick when they have to stay in a nowhere hotel that's still an hour away from the racetrack. So NASCAR's in a really tough spot here where on one side they're fighting with the tradition of the sport, the traditional racetracks that they've always had, while still trying to expand and grow into these major markets. It's going to be a really tough solution that they're going to have to come up with, and I don't know what the solution for it's going to be because of how difficult it is to break into these big markets. We're going to have to see what Southern California looks like. That's probably the closest alligator to the boat that NASCAR is going to have to address. They clearly don't want to give up on the Southern California market, but what they do to retain it is going to have to be something we pay attention to.
Okay. Jay, you think we can get one more topic in or not? Hello? Did I lose Jay? Must be the mute button again. Okay, can you guys hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, I can
hear
you. Again, somehow mine is making a second call to you, but I'm here if you can hear me.
Okay, I can hear you.
Okay.
I thought maybe it was me for a minute.
No, it's me, and I don't know why it's trying to dial a second line. But Mike had put this up, and I was just talking to my family. Is Kyle Busch in that point in his career? I guess he didn't get a whole lot of booze after his victory. Is he hitting that point in his career where he was the hated driver and is now the popular driver? And we go back through Darrell Waltrip. Rusty Wallace switched, although I think Rusty went from good to bad. Most of them go from bad to good. Dale Earnhardt, Jeff Gordon, they all hit a point. Tony Stewart, they went to a point in a career of no longer dominating. I don't know if Jimmy Johnson ever really hit it, but kind of now a fan favorite or people behind him. With his victory at California there with RCR, not getting booed as much. So is he at that point now where he's going to become a fan favorite versus the villain?
Okay. Mike, your thoughts about that?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I mean, part of the question is it the reaction to Kyle Busch, or was it a negative reaction to Toyota and Joe Gibbs Racing that's no longer there? Joe Gibbs Racing is a very polarizing team. There's a lot of people who tend to not like Joe Gibbs Racing as a blanket statement. And Kyle Busch was kind of the lightning rod for Joe Gibbs Racing. Now, make no mistake, Kyle, his personality, his antics, they definitely have not exactly painted him in the most positive picture. And he has very happily and proudly worn the black hat for many, many years. So this is not all Kyle Busch is an innocent victim or anything like that. I'm not saying that at all. But there is an interesting concern of, well, Denny Hamlin gets booed pretty hard. Kyle Busch got booed really bad when he drove a Toyota. Ty Gibbs gets booed all day long. Even Martin Truex gets booed, not as bad as Hamlin and Busch, but even Martin Truex can catch some boos. And is it because they're driving Toyotas for Joe Gibbs Racing? I don't know. But like Jay said, a lot of these drivers, they get booed because they're too good. It's really hard to say, but you know, a driver can be seen as winning too much. Jeff Gordon was a great example. Booed continuously through the 90s and all through the 2000s. And then by the time he retired in the mid-2010s, they had fans literally cheering his name at Martinsville when he won the race for his last win. So Kurt Busch is another example. Kyle's brother was mercilessly booed, and rightfully so, because Kurt deserved every single boo that he got. But he really turned that corner. And I think a lot of fans were sympathetic to him by the time he finished out his career, and especially the way his career ended with the injury. I think a lot of fans are very sympathetic to Kurt Busch and have a much higher opinion of him in his later years. Maybe Kyle Busch is turning that corner. I would like to think that Race for the Championship may have helped with that. But then again, it was me and apparently like six other people who watched that show. So maybe that wasn't enough reach to really move the needle on the opinion of Kyle Busch. But he was presented very favorably in that show, and rightfully so. He's off the track. He's like Joey Logano, a very different person off the racetrack. Still a very confident person, but he's a devoted family man. He's very good with his wife, Samantha, and his two children. Just a regular guy who's got a job kind of a thing. And I think that showed very well in Race for the Championship. I wish more people had seen it. Maybe even Kyle Busch would get booed even less. I don't know. But it was interesting to see yesterday with a very different reaction coming from the sold-out grandstands with Kyle Busch winning a race versus what he got even just 1 year ago.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's kind of a situational thing. If you think about Jeff Gordon, he came in and was given Dale Earnhardt kind of a run for his money, and Dale Earnhardt was rattling his cage. And so there was big competition between the fans. If you were an Earnhardt fan, you hated Jeff Gordon. If you're a Jeff Gordon fan, you didn't care for Earnhardt. So that kind of thing is what kind of did it for Jeff Gordon. And over the years, he kind of overcome that. I know I wasn't happy with Jeff Gordon a few times with some of the things that he did on the track. If you think about some of the drivers that we're talking about here, Kyle Busch has certainly said and done some things that a lot of fans don't care for. They think he's got an attitude or whatever, and fans don't care for that, so they boo him. Same thing with Denny Hamlin. Denny Hamlin's a very outspoken kind of guy, and sometimes fans don't care for what he has to say, so they're going to boo him. I don't think it has anything at all to do with Toyota. I really don't. It just so happens that he's, you know, all those drivers, with the exception of, well, Jeff Gordon was in a Chevy. But Ty Gibbs is another driver who's kind of said a few things early in his career that kind of make people scratch their head and think he's done some things to the track, to the drivers on the track that the drivers don't care for him. So Jimmy Johnson was an all-round good guy, but he got called he was called vanilla, too vanilla. But a lot of, even I got a little weary of him winning all the time and none of the other drivers seeming to have a chance to go after that championship. So I do think there's some weariness that takes place when somebody wins all the time. So I think there's a lot of reasons for it that have nothing to do with what manufacturer they're driving for. I think it has to do with the driver and what happens over time. I think I wrote an article about Jimmy Johnson, in fact, where I was talking about how, you know, during the moment, we've got so many people that are upset about him winning all the time, they're not realizing that we're watching history in the making with him being as successful as he is on the track. Plus, I think a lot of people, this was the other thing, the little cloud that followed Jimmy Johnson around all the time was Chad Knaus. A lot of people felt like he was cheating, and that's why Jimmy Johnson was able to win all those races. So that caused people to boo him while he was winning all of those races. But then they realized he was a really good guy, and so he doesn't get those boos anymore. He's a fan favorite. So I just think that there's a lot of reasons for why those things happen, and I think that drivers, you know, think about Ty Gibbs and how young he is and some of the mistakes that he's made in his career. People evolve, they mature, they get older, and they realize that they weren't very level-headed when they were younger. Kurt Busch is a good example of that. He punched Jimmy Spencer when he was sitting in his car. So, yeah, a lot of reasons why people don't like those drivers. But they do mature, they do get older, they do evolve, and people realize that they're decent human beings. So I think that has more to do with it than anything. Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think you both got some valid points. I think there are some, and I think back to Jack Roush when he lost Matt Kenseth. He went to the dark side of Toyota. I think there are some that are still embedded in the manufacturers, and I got family and friends that are very Ford, you know, anything else isn't real. So there's something to that. As my dad said then of Kyle Busch, it will depend on his attitude on the track. You know, Mike brought up of, you know, people saw who he is off the track with his son and everything else, and that does help. But when it comes to how he handles himself, you know, Ross Chastain can out-wreck people and people cheer him. Kyle Busch wrecks somebody and they boo him. So it also has to do with their overall attitude. Some of it, I think, is maybe tied to RCR. They want to see RCR, you know, it's not Earnhardt, that organization become great again like it was. I think back to, and I know I've admitted it, and Sharon, I think you were another one, when Kyle Busch got hurt, missed 11 races, still came back, raced his way in, top 30, got the wins, and won the championship, fans were pulling for him. And I think that's a case of here of they feel like maybe he got pushed out and wasn't taken care of at Gibbs, and people relate to that story and are glad to see him overcoming that. I know personally when he did the interview prior to Daytona saying that actually Joe Gibbs was willing to give him money out of his own pocket and Kyle didn't feel right about that. So, I mean, that tells you about how his true heart and character. And I'm saying he doesn't have his moments on the track and that's still where he's going to have to prove that change of heart and attitude. But I think that'll carry some weight. So I think there are several factors, but and I don't, like I said, I wouldn't discredit any of them. Of manufacturer thing isn't real anymore today. I can testify there are some true blue Ford fans out there that will never change.
Okay. Mike, your follow-up?
Well, Jay's not wrong. I'm a Chevy guy, and I'm not a Kyle Busch fan. Don't lump me in with that. I'm not going to call myself a Kyle Busch fan, but I'd be lying if I said I wasn't happy to see Kyle Busch win yesterday because he drives a Chevrolet now. And so is it 100% of the attitude regarding Kyle Busch? No, absolutely not. Is it 50%? Probably still not even up to that threshold. But there is definitely still a manufacturer loyalty piece in there, even though anyone who really knows a lot about these cars knows that manufacturers, really the difference comes down to some sheet metal, some stickers, and maybe some engine differences. But realistically, the cars are about 95% the same, whether they're a Ford, Chevy, or a Toyota. So manufacturer is more just kind of the flag you fly as opposed to anything to do with real tangible differences with the race cars. But again, like I said, I'm a Chevy guy, so seeing Kyle Busch win in a Chevrolet was definitely much better for me than seeing Kyle Busch win in a Toyota, I'll put it that way. What really is going to tell the story, I think, is going to be when Kyle Busch wins at a more traditional NASCAR track. You know, if he wins at North Wilkesboro for the All-Star race, that'll be a really telling thing because I would imagine North Wilkesboro is going to be some of the most, I don't know if you want to say dedicated, but probably the most diehard kind of NASCAR fans are going to be the fans that show up to North Wilkesboro or Darlington or some of the more traditional NASCAR tracks, and that's probably going to be a much better barometer for if there really is a change in attitude with Kyle Busch, or if it was just the nature of Southern California has a very different sports, market or fan base, however you want to put it. It's kind of like Miami, where it's all a bunch of transplants, and fan loyalty isn't as regional or as hardwired as it is in some places, other places in the country. So seeing what happens with Kyle Busch later in the year, I think is what's really going to tell the story, and I'm interested to see it.
Okay, and I'm going to say it probably is a little bit of both. So everybody's bringing up really good points. Jay, you get the final word there.
Well, I know I brought up some of the other drivers that have gone through. Each one of them, there was a reason they were where they are at and why they are. Sharon mentioned Ty Gibbs. That is one of the, and it was with Kyle Busch's teammate, the Silver Spoon. That's why they feel that one kind of gets some resentment. Jeff Gordon was the outsider because he wasn't one of the Southeast moonshiner. Okay, he came from the outside. Daryl Waltrip's was the Jaws. I mean, just running his mouth, his cocky attitude. So each one of them had a little bit different. Kyle's guy hasn't been his attitude. And several different things, but I do think that you are going to see some fans get behind him. Now, if he goes back to winning as much as he did, maybe that comes back a little bit, but I think a big part will be his overall attitude towards the fan, towards other drivers, and it'll be interesting to see how RCR keeps that in check. I know they keep bringing it up because when Kyle Busch was on the other side and him and Richard hold my watch, that's getting brought up and we'll never die. Maybe it's a closed door meeting at the office at the shop where Richard says, hey, hold my watch. I'm going to talk to one of my employees now. I mean, you don't know.
Yep.
So it'll be interesting. I was happy to see him, and I felt like he would this year. He broke the record. He now holds the record that we talked about in the pre-show, 19 years in a row with a victory. So I respect his talent. He is one of those we talk about, Kyle Larson, Christopher Bell. Put him behind the wheel or the wheel of anything with wheels, a wagon, anything. He can drive the wheels off of it. He's got that talent, and that's what impresses me. I don't always like how he carries himself, what he says, and everything else. But you got to respect that talent.
All right. Let's go ahead and do our roundtable. Mike, you can start.
Sure. Mike underscore O on Twitter. Mike double underscore O on Reddit. Nothing new to report. Our autocross racing season should be kicking off here the middle of, well, it's still February, so the middle of next month, middle of March, at Columbus Air Force Base. So I'll be trying to get out there and do a little bit of very, very amateur racing here shortly, weather and site approval pending.
Okay, that sounds good. Jay?
Social media is MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. Michael Huseman on Facebook, and barring weather, we'll see. I think there's three different events here. Columbus Speedway had a practice, the baddest bowling in the South. They are racing this weekend, March 4th, which is also my mom's birthday. Happy birthday. Why not Motorsports Park? I might go visit Chris Crichton, the dirtiest voice in the South, at the House of Hook. They got the Battle of the State. Or it is not your capital city race, we got the go-kart track with it. Don't know where I'm going to be yet. It'll depend on weather, but we're in that season. I'm getting ready. I'm spending my weekend on the track.
Okay. I'm Fan for Racing site on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio elsewhere, as well as our website, fanforracing.com. Talked with Sal tonight. He was out at Auto Club Speedway, he's gone there, I think, every year since that Speedway existed. And I was kind of asking him about some of his thoughts with this being the last weekend of racing out at that track. Hopefully, I also talked him into putting together an article, putting together some of those thoughts for fanforracing.com. So watch for that to be coming down the pipeline here, hopefully soon. I think it's kind of a missed opportunity if we don't get some of that written down. Also, we have the recaps as on fanforracing.com, as well as the power ranking that Owen's been doing in the recaps from Sam Bornhorst. Let's see. There was something. Oh, we had Greg Van Alst on the show earlier, the winner of the Daytona 500, not 500, I keep saying that, but the winner at Daytona in the Arca Menard Series. And it was great talking to him. Jay called in, asked a question. If you didn't hear that interview, I would highly recommend it. It's in the second half hour of the show. And we're looking forward to doing our preview show this Thursday night for the races out at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend. And Jay, will, of course, will be our co-host. We start at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And we'll be out on social media to let everybody know the details of that show. So with that, guys, it's a big thank you to our listeners for tuning in. And we'll look forward to talking to you again on Thursday night. With that, I think we're ready to call it a wrap.
Good night, everybody.
Good night. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Good night, everybody.